This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Information hearings for Eric Holder for the post of United States Attorney General. This is KPFT Houston.
Love me forever. Take me to heaven. Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music dear to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
We have extensions.
I see.
Hello, Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is the January 10th edition of After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. My name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one. But for this weekend, you are the man. You had an incredible show last night, raising money for RMCC and the food pantry and for the Louis Food Committee. Yes. And you were hoping to get money and food to equal your weight.
Yeah, and we were...
A dollar a pound.
I was so unsure about it. That's why I brought in the thing of, you know, a dollar equals a pound.
You got at least three times that.
Yeah, people think I'm a bigger fat ass than I am. I went to my doctor on Thursday. I weighed myself, so I had the official weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I did. I lost 5 pounds over Christmas. I don't know how the hell I did that. So the goal was 394, and we raised in cash donations specifically for the food pantry of $459.
Plus,
then we did $241 for the Louis Food Committee.
Mm-hmm. Total of $700 even.
Actually, it's $701 because
is it
when they found an extra dollar when they were carrying out the food.
Okay, $701.
And then we loaded up my car.
At least 500 pounds of food.
The back seat was filled, the passenger seat was filled.
And you have a not-so-late model luxury car with a roomy interior.
It's a Crown Vic. It's a former police car for a school district. So it's, you know, it's used to hauling prisoners in the back, but it was a lowrider before I got my butt into the car. And like, the scary part was I was going to EJ's afterwards. And if those of you have been to EJ's, you realize that when you're exiting, you've got that lunar landscape.
Yeah.
That I don't think even NASA would want to drive a rover across.
Yes.
I lucked out. I parked like six parking spaces in.
So that you backed out and went.
I backed all the way back out to Ralph Street to get out of there because my poor suspension.
Because your car was loaded almost. Well, the back seat was loaded
to
the headrest. And the passenger seat was
totally full.
So, really appreciative of all the groups that came out there. You know, I teased about it afterwards. We had a quorum. We could have had a Louis meeting.
You could.
We had all but one member of the board.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the majority of the clubs had some representatives mm-hmm. there.
Yes, I saw that you were. That was an incredible thank you that you sent just hours after the event.
Yeah, I had a little trouble sleeping last night, so it was.
You were pretty emotional.
I started crying up, and Christopher Prado came up to me and told me no crying. And I said, "No one can tell me I can't cry, especially you."
Yes, he can't talk about that.
No, I was. Like I said, I walked in there not sure what was going to happen, and to walk in and see the pile of food that was already there.
Mm-hmm.
The different groups that were represented, I think the final count came to, we were 17 performers.
Mm-hmm.
We did 20 numbers.
Yeah.
And the twisted part about it is, I forget who mentioned it, there was only two drag queens.
That's true.
We only had Marcia and Regina.
And Regina, well, if you're going to have drag queens, those are the two to have.
And one natural woman.
Susan Hayes
was there. We had three singers performing live,
mm-hmm. including Jay Arsenault,
who did two numbers for me mm-hmm. for the show. And I was just, I was almost literally floored. Some of them reminded me never to kneel down during a show segment again there. You weren't there for that part, were
no,
you?
No, I missed that.
You missed that. My routine involved me kneeling down. And I was so afraid of not being able to get up. And it happened. I tried getting up, and it wasn't happening. So I had a stool nearby, and I grabbed it and pulled it over and put my arm on it. And I still couldn't get up. And finally, my legs just were not working. My arm was not working. So.
You were emotional.
And I just could not get up from it. And I finally forced myself up. And three people came up to me afterwards and they said, "We were giving you two chances. If you didn't get up on the second chance, we were coming in after you." And like I said, I finally got up, so I did the number I've always wanted to do on stage.
Yes.
And when I think people heard the title of it there, they got a good chuckle out of them.
The Porn Star?
Porn Star Shining Down on Me.
Yes.
Which is the reason I had to get down on my knees. it was tremendous. A lot of fun. And so, just warning everybody, look out, because in the next couple of months, I think I'm coming back.
Okay. He's going to do this, a repeat performance.
I have to come up with a production company name, which I already twistedly have come up with one.
Yes, and you've already come up with an idea for a poster for the next one, which I don't know if it's going to attract people or keep them away.
I'm just worried about getting approval for it. I got a feeling this is going to be like one of the Beatles albums. There's going to be two different covers you're going to see.
Yeah.
There's a little hint on what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't that scare you? We have a full show tonight. We've got Theater Suburbia is here. They're going to tell us about their new production that's happening right now. They already had opening night of Dryope and Ioli, a new play. And guess what? Arisa's is here.
The Empire of the Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star, Inc., Houston, Galveston, Texas.
The world.
Yada, yada,
galaxy.
Yada.
Galaxy, yeah. And, of course, it's Leather Night.
Yes.
So they're waiting, all waiting in the wings. Wes is here with us.
Howdy, folks.
Hey. And so let's do a few announcements.
Quickies.
Yeah. Starting with Wes.
Okay. Well, got one in from Eric Boo Boo Stoot.
Oh, Boo Boo, yeah.
Yeah, good old Boo Boo. How's it going out there, Boo Boo? He's calling all performers. If you can make it, please let them know. It's going to be so much fun. Gods versus goddesses, men versus women. Who Can Raise the Most Money? Sunday, January the 11th at 2009 at 8 p.m. at the BRB, benefiting Camp Hope.
Yeah. Camp Hope at 2400 Brazos.
That's the BRB at that, not Camp Hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way you said it, it sounded like, you know.
Oh, sorry.
They're pitching tents there. Down.
Yeah, never know.
It's not the homeless section.
Never know.
We can go over this one real quick because we've got Arisa's here tonight. This is talking about the upcoming coronation.
Okay.
Yes.
To Arisa's members in the Houston community, the Empire of the Royal, Sovereign, and Imperial Court of the Single Star of Houston, Texas, would like to personally invite you to Coronation 25 in Houston, Texas, January 16th through the 18th, 2009. However, due to Hurricane Ike, our original chosen hotel, the Sheraton Brook Hollow, is still under reconstruction and repairs and will not be open in time for our coronation. Therefore, with the assistance of the Sheraton Brook Hollow, we will be moving all events to the Sheraton North. The Sheraton North has graciously agreed to keep the same rates as negotiated, $85 a night. They will also be moving the reservations previously made with our group to the new location and will contact anyone who has already made reservations to inform them of the change with a new confirmation number. Please allow about a week for this change to happen. The Sheraton North is located at 15700 JFK Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77032, just outside Intercontinental Airport, and offers a free shuttle to and from the airport every 20 minutes. To make hotel reservations...
They don't need that.
They don't need that part?
Yeah.
Okay. Please understand the board of directors, general membership, and the hotels are working hard to make this transition as simple as possible for everyone involved. If you experience any difficulties with your reservation, whether existing or new, please do not hesitate to contact any member of the board of directors, and they will be happy to assist you to ensure an enjoyable visit to our realm. We look forward to seeing you all at Coronation 25.
Ah. Okay. Chris, what have you got?
Renee Cantu wants to remind you of the first fundraiser as Mr. Leather Houston will be coming up in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Mr. Chuck Renslow, founder and executive producer of the International Mr. Leather, will be joining them and giving a presentation about the history of BDSM and a historical perspective of how the IML event has helped shape the leather community.
International Mr. Leather.
This is a dinner in black, a formal leather dinner.
Ooh.
On Sunday.
Sunday.
January 25th at 6 p.m. at One's a Meal, 812 Westheimer.
Ah.
That's the former...
Actually, we can do a little restaurant review in about 3 minutes on that. The Theater Suburbia Group just came from there.
I've got a feeling they are speechless and green.
Okay.
Which is nice. You know, Judy could use some color.
Oh.
And it's a color that matches your couch. Finally. tickets are $50. It's benefiting the Colt 45's AIDS Trouble Fund.
Yeah.
For more information, you can send an email to Mr. L. THRHSTN.
What?
Mr. Leather Houston without any vowels.
Oh, okay.
So, Vanna, don't buy a vowel. So it's Mr. Leather Houston 2008 at AOL.com, but leave out every vowel you can get.
Okay.
And once again, it's hosted by Mr. Leather Houston, Renee Cantu.
Okay.
Next one?
Okay. Yeah, what do you got?
Houston native and stand-up comedian Vicky Shaw has moved back to Houston and is teaming up with fellow comic Ginny McNulty for a fantastic night of stand-up comedy and improvisation.
Ooh.
You don't want to miss these funny women, both recently voted in the top 10 funniest lesbians in America. Each will perform stand-up separately and then play together, doing a hysterical improvisational based on suggestions from the audience.
Oh, my.
Come and enjoy the show and celebrate Vicky's DVD release, You Can't Take the Girl Out of Texas, by welcoming Vicky back home. You have Vicky Shaw currently has a special on from the video, You Can't Take the Girl Out of Texas.
Is that on Logo?
It is on Logo. You can see it several times.
Ooh.
She shows her cute son. It's so funny when she makes comments, I really shouldn't be saying this in front of my son.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. She apologized.
But says it anyway.
When is
this happening?
This will be they'll be performing at Chance's Bar, 1100 Westheimer, on January 25th, starting at 7 p.m.
Oh. So if you're not going to the International Mr. Leather Dinner, then you can go see Vicki Shaw.
You can get your tickets online at www.brownpapertickets.com, or you can get them at Chance's Bar. Remaining tickets will be available for the at the door the night of the show.
Okay. And...
this one too?
Yeah.
The Gay Old Opry BRB style, celebrating the tradition of traditional and classic country music on Friday, January 30th from 9 to 11 at the BRB. This is hosted by Aaron Patterson, candidate for Mr. BRB 2009.
Oh, it's his candidate show.
Yes.
Oh.
And this will be benefiting the PWA Holiday Charities.
Great. Great. What's the date on that again?
Friday, January 30th.
Oh, okay. Over at the Montrose Counseling Center, there's a coming out support group, which begins January 28th. As the new year begins, many people take this opportunity to set goals for themselves in the coming months. If one of yours is to become more open about who you are, please consider joining the coming out support group, which begins on Wednesday, January the 28th. And I think that should do it for right now. I want to bring the theater group in.
They're already in.
Okay. Well, let me move over a little bit so I can see them.
Oh, don't you stare at her enough.
Hello, hello, hello.
Are we open?
Hi. Hi. Hi.
Well, you know,
push the button.
I've got to say this because for the audience out there, I'm in the control room.
For a change.
Wait. I'm just not operating the controls. This is where... it's the control room where Chris and I sit.
And they're never in control.
And there is a large picture window that looks into the talk studio where we do our interviews. And for the first time in... well, not the first time, but certainly it's been a good 20 years... Mr. Bruce Reeves is...
It has not been 20 years since I've been on the air in this station.
It's been close. It's been close. In fact, that's how I met Bruce and Judy Reeves. When I first came to After Hours, I walked in and they were on the control side.
Well, you met me on the phone first.
Yeah, that's true. let's not go there.
Quit hovering over my shoulder and you park it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Jimmy didn't get his own mic?
Yes, I do.
I thought you did. Oh, okay. Chris is leaving.
Yeah.
Chris.
I used to be the one that had to do this. Then I found Chris.
I know.
So it's been great.
Who knew he was trainable?
I know. Now, we have a new play by Nancy.
Nancy?
Mm-hmm.
Kiefer?
Yes.
Yes. And we have 11 people to talk about it.
Wow.
Actually, we have the whole cast and then some.
And then some is right, because I've seen the play, there weren't 11 people in it.
No. Although tonight it's... never mind.
Yeah, but it takes a lot more than just the actors on stage to put a play on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes the board. It takes the volunteers. It takes an awful lot of people.
And it takes the actors more than just acting to be in a play.
Yeah, they have to learn how to swing a hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And very paint important. And
let's not talk about paint. Pamela's in the room.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We still have a porch we can't step on. The paint hadn't dried. We did it before Christmas.
I heard that story.
Yes. But I am very happy that the entire cast is here tonight. And we opened Dryope and Ioli on Friday night, last night. I guess it's still Saturday.
It is still Saturday. Until you go to bed, it's still Saturday night.
Yeah. Actually, I directed it, and Bruce... assistant director.
Yes.
Directed.
And, yes, and that was your first time?
It was his first time.
Assistant directing?
Yes, I can no longer include that in my list of things I'm a virgin at.
And it's such a short list to begin with.
And you two are still alive.
Yes, we're still alive. We're still talking. He still stays upstairs from my couch, yes. But, that's
but
okay.
I'm also glad she's living with you.
So is she. But we won't go there. Okay, moving right along.
Please.
Yeah. I'm going to let everybody kind of introduce themselves and talk a little about the play, and then we'll do a quickie. No, you're not doing... Okay. Start, just tell us your name, what part you're playing, and a little bit about yourself.
Yes.
Into the mic. It's okay.
Oh, dear. I'm Kathleen Baker. I'm playing Sissy Nolan in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, what's good about me? I'm from Kansas.
There you go.
There we go.
You're not there anymore, honey.
I need my red shoes. Yeah, it's my first play in Houston. I've done theater up in Kansas, but this is my first show down here.
And we are oh so glad to have her. She's a KPFT virgin. We have three here tonight that have never been here before, and actually have never been on Theater Suburbia stage before.
I think y'all just like saying virgin.
Leave me right alone. Because we don't know any. Go.
My name's Laura Schlacht. I play a character called Bernice. This is the first show I've done in over a year, so I'm really excited about it, but I am pretty involved, have been involved with the theater and film community around here, and I currently produce the Houston 48-Hour Film Project.
I heard about that the other night from a very old friend of mine.
All of his friends are very old.
Actually, no, the friend isn't old. I've just known him a long time.
Oh, okay.
I've known him since he was a teenager, actually.
Not touching that one.
So,
yeah. Okay.
Next.
Bunny.
It's Bunny Barbara Hartman.
Ta-da! And happy birthday to you, too, honey.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
I love Capricorns.
Mentioning that on the radio. I am playing the narrator. However, the narrator is actually Kathleen's character, all grown up.
Ah.
So, I'm actually Cicely Nolan. It doesn't really come introduced that way. She just comes on and talks.
She does. Assumed. She does, and then you realize what's going on there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, who else?
Speak.
My name is Haig Caesar.
Hi, Haig.
I play Howard McClellan, FBI agent, and I'm pretty much looking for Bernice. She's wanted for murder.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah. And I moved here from Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, about a year and a half ago. And this is my first play here at Theater Suburbia, but I've done other productions in Louisville, several, and television and all kinds of good stuff.
Well, welcome to Houston, and we hope to see you on the stage again.
And he's hoping to find a part next time where he doesn't have to shave off his beard and mustache. But he did it.
He did. He
for
did
the very
do that,
first time.
Yes. And I've seen him both ways, as a matter of fact.
Ooh.
Well, pictures.
Okay. Okay. Never mind. Just let's move before it gets bad.
And my name's Pam Hensley, and I play the part of Genevieve. Genevieve is the mother and the glue that holds the family together.
She'd like to think
that. I'm the sister of Bernice.
Ah.
So, and I am the one who painted the porch that is still trying to dry.
Oh, okay.
I painted it Thanksgiving weekend.
I took a vacation from theater for about 20 years, and this is I'm getting back into it this year, so I've really enjoyed getting into the play and the character. It's been a lot of fun.
Good, good. Who else do we have?
One more in
the
corner.
Hi, Jimmy.
Oh.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I'm Auntie Judy's favoritist niece, Elizabeth Zeiss.
I didn't know that.
I am your favoritist.
Okay. Yes.
I play Evie Joseph, and this is my first play ever. I've helped in other plays at my school, at my high school, but it's the first time I've ever been on stage.
Wow.
So, that's pretty much the cast. We also have Doris and Elvin here, neither of which ever speak, but they are here with us.
Yes, they are.
And we have, go ahead and introduce yourself. It's okay, you're not in the play.
Hi, my name's Daryl. I'm the assistant to the director of the assistant to the director.
An honorary photographer.
An honorary photographer.
And a great wine pourer, and he does a heck of a camera. So
I
that's
see.
Okay.
Okay.
And last but not least, we have the assistant director with us. First time in a studio in umpteen years, Mr. Bruce Reeves.
You know, it's been less than 10 since I was behind the control board at this place. So I don't know why he thinks it's has been 20 years. But it's been fun to step behind the scenes and help direct a show.
Yes,
you've been on stage before.
You have.
So this was a new experience for me, and I've enjoyed it. It's I even enjoyed working with Judy. So
and the trees
and the cast has been kind of fun too. You know, it's you reach a point where you've given them the same lines 20 times, and it's like, okay, they're never going to get that note, and then preview night, they do every note you've ever given them.
And
so
it's like,
you know, it was kind of a good feeling.
And your trees are fabulous.
Thank you, dear.
Yes, you have to come to the theater to see the trees.
Mm-hmm.
They're wilty. So.
Anyway, Daffy and Natalie, this is the only mythological-based story that Nancy's ever tried to do, and it's one of her favorites. So this is based on Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
There were two sisters who actually, one of them was turned into a tree because of her behavior and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we have the name of the play This is basically the story of two sisters who, estranged sisters, who come together after 20 years of separation. And they try to mend some fences and take care of some business and so on. And there's a daughter involved, which the estranged sister had never met, mm-hmm. who was quite taken with her. So it's an interesting story of family relationships and that kind of thing.
It's more than a chick drama.
Yes, thank you very much. This is what James called it. The audiences have received it well so far. I mean, we've only had Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We had preview and mm-hmm. opening. But it's been fun. We'll be running till February the 7th on Fridays and Saturdays. And we have two Sunday performances, which are January 25th and February 1st at 3 p.m.
Okay.
You can call the box office at 713-682-3525 to make reservations or ask any questions if you need to. And if you can... need to know where the theater is located, because we are in a new location.
Oh, that's right. New location.
That's right. We're at 4106 Way Out West Road. Thank you very much. Just really off Hempstead Highway. Old Hempstead. And?
There's a special fundraiser performance for GCAM next Thursday.
Yes, there are. On the 15th.
At 8:30. So
you can find out about that. Do not call the theater for that, please. You can call me at 832-722-5785. And what we'd like to do, if we have a few minutes, is just do a couple of little scenes and give people a flavor.
I would love it.
We're going to start with the older Sissy, who is the narrator, which... Casting no aspersions on your age, my dear, in spite of your birthday. Bunny is going to start out for us. Just give us an idea.
My mother and I were alone that summer because my father had gone to find work. In 1935 and 36, he rode the Great Northern Railroad out to Montana with a few other men from Lotus Falls. They went to work on a WPA job building Fort Peck Dam. He worked as a laborer for 50 cents an hour and sent us back everything the camp didn't deduct from his living expenses. We wrote to us every couple of weeks and sent us his pay. I read his rather uninspiring letters often, not so much because I missed my father, nor I was not particularly fond of either of my parents in those days. I read those letters, fondled the very paper they were written on, because they came from someplace else. I had never been out of Lotus Falls in my life, except on my 14th birthday when my mother took me to Columbus on the bus to see It Happened One Night at the show. Montana was as foreign and mysterious to me as Shanghai or Africa, and those letters made adventure seem attainable to me. They served as a constant reminder that life did indeed exist outside of my town, and that was the passion that drove me in those days to get out of Lotus Falls. My mother, whose name was Genevieve, was a simple person in most respects. She was plain to look at, had little formal education, no interest in worldly or cultural things or organized religion. I think she was a Christian, though. She never declared it officially, but she did force me to go to Catholic Mass on Sundays and learn the faith. Even though I had lived with her for 16 years, I knew my mother only superficially. I knew the frugal, hard-working, and compassionate surface, but I did not know her, the core that was her. I sensed there was a great deal going on inside of her, and every so often she would begin to lift the veil that covered her. But she'd always stop, and I would be left with only the vaguest hint of her secret, not enough to derive anything substantial about her. At 16, I needed clarity, and it distressed me to live alone with someone who was always bathed half in shadow.
Good enough.
The only security my mother and I had during the Depression was the white frame farmhouse and its 88 acres, located half a mile outside of Lotus Falls. Her father had owned it, lock, stock, and barrel, and had left it to her when he died, she being his only child. Or so I thought. It was a nondescript, typical Ohio farm, except for the lovely grove of 22 white poplar trees beside it. No one passing by would have noticed our place if it had not been for those trees. My great-grandfather had planted them. They gave shade and beauty and elegance to our lives. As a child, I played with my dolls among them and read beneath them and hid from my mother behind them and jumped into and burned their leaves. When I was younger,
I did not know what the word mystical meant, but there was something indeed mystical about those trees. Even then, I knew they had a secret. They knew why they had been planted. I could hear them whispering about it on windy October nights, or when an April storm stirred their spirits, and I knew that someday they would reveal it to me. However, that year I did not know how near this revelation was. I did not suspect that the rite of summer had begun, and what a strange and somber sacrifice those mysterious trees would demand.
Okay, so it is kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you very much. Now, real quickie here, we're going to have a little conversation between the two younger girls, Evie and Sissy.
Okay.
And Sissy's aunt, Bernice. What are you looking at me like that for?
You made it sound like it was just us two.
No. And Aunt Bernice. I'll just go ahead and do it. I think it's self-explanatory.
Okay. You fixing to go someplace with that suitcase, Evie?
I'm running away.
Are you? That's too bad.
No, it ain't. Only thing good about Lotus Falls is leaving it.
When I was your age, I thought that, too.
You ran away?
I did. And now I'm back right where I started off from.
Well, I ain't coming back.
That's what I said.
I gotta see something before I die besides this stinking little town. And I gotta get away from my ma.
What's the matter with her?
She's a slut.
What a pity. You got a father?
Not anymore. Doesn't matter, he was a son of a bitch.
You know something? You remind me a lot of myself.
So?
So, I wish I could give you some advice, but you don't strike me as the kind of person who'd be interested.
If you're going to tell me it's foolish to run away from home, then you're right. I ain't interested.
I wasn't going to tell you that, girl. I was just going to warn you about the world outside of Lotus Falls. It's big, and it ain't a very nice place. And if you think your ma's a slut and your pa was a son of a bitch, wait till you meet what's waiting for you out there.
If you're trying to scare me, I ain't scared yet.
Nah, you don't look like the kind of person who scares easy. Just remember something, Evie Joseph. You can always come home if things get too bad.
Thanks for the advice. Sissy, I gotta get going. You coming or ain't ya? This is your absolute last chance.
You planning to run off too, Sissy?
I was thinking about it.
Well, I hope you don't. You and me just met, and I'd like the chance to get to know my one and only favorite niece before she takes on the world all by herself.
I can't go, Evie. Maybe next summer, like you said.
Suit yourself. So long, Bernice.
You take care, Evie. And don't peroxide your hair any more than once a month. Otherwise, it'll dry up and fall out of your head.
Oh, yeah? I'll remember that.
You write to me. You promised.
I will. Goodbye, Sissy. Come visit me.
Where's she going?
Columbus. I'm gonna miss her. Why'd you leave, Aunt Bernice?
What, I run away?
Yeah.
Because I didn't like your grandpa or grandma very much. Did you know them?
Nope. They died when I was real little.
You didn't miss much. They were kind of crazy.
What do you mean, crazy?
Well, your grandpa was always screaming and yelling and cursing and threatening to shoot people. He never did, but he sure put the fear of God into us. And your grandma was so holy that it made me want to throw up sometimes. She was always dragging me and your mom to church and having us blessed and prayed over. I got real tired of living with them.
So you just left one day?
Yep, and on real bad terms. You heard that expression, going from the frying pan into the fire? Well, that's what I did. I left one bad situation and went to an even worse one. But that's my middle name, you know. Bernice from the frying pan into the fire singer.
Did you leave all by yourself?
No, I left with my boyfriend.
What was his name?
You're the nosiest person I ever met, Sissy. His name was Eddie. And let's change the subject, okay? What do you do these days in Lotus Falls on a Friday night?
Nothing. Like I told you, town's about dead. Only interest in people living in it are the Prescotts, but my ma don't want like me talking to them.
Who's the Prescotts?
White trash. They live over by the railroad tracks. I like talking to them, but Ma said that if I go sit on their front porch, I'll get me a reputation.
Happens to everybody sooner or later. Personally, I'd rather have a reputation for being white trash than a lot of other things people can call you.
Like what?
Like the town lunatic like my pa, or worse, a religious fanatic like my ma, or an eccentric old maid like Miss Hatton.
What was your reputation?
Mine? Well, when I left here, 16 years old with a man more than twice my age, I guess you can imagine.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to cut that little short thing through. Okay. One more real quick one, okay. Because we have to get Haig in here for you.
Yes!
Yeah. Oh, and Pamela, too, the painter. Pamela, the painter.
Because he looked really hot on stage.
Yeah, well, y'all can talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we've got to bring the FBI guy in here and get the law into the show.
Okay.
Though. Okay.
Afternoon, ladies.
Afternoon. Something I can do for you?
Maybe. Are you Mrs. Jack Nolan, formerly Genevieve Singer?
Yes, I am.
My name is Howard McClellan, Mrs. Nolan. I'm with the FBI.
Oh, God, this don't have nothing to do with my husband, does it? Nothing's happened to him?
No, ma'am. This has nothing at all to do with your husband. Actually, I'm here about your sister, Bernice Singer.
What about her?
Have you seen her, Mrs. Nolan? We have reason to believe she's in this part of the state. And, of course, since her home is here, we thought we'd check first with you.
Why do you believe she'd be here?
Because we've arrested the woman she's been traveling with for the past 2 years outside of Columbus a few weeks ago. Her name was Louise Brown, and she was wanted in the state of Maryland for grand theft. Unfortunately, she died in jail and waiting transport back to Baltimore.
But why are you looking for my sister?
We've been looking for her for 2 years, ma'am. She's wanted in Maryland for murder.
Murder?
That's right. She's our prime suspect in the murder of a man named Irwin Thompson, a former employer of hers. She was the last person seen with him prior to his death, and there seems to have been a motive. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Mrs. Nolan. I know how shocking this must be. I must ask you again, have you seen your sister?
I ain't seen my sister in over 20 years.
That long?
That long. She ran off with a man... Long time ago, my family lost touch with her. I doubt I'd even recognize her if I saw her.
Are you sure? Concealment of a fugitive is a federal offense, and I'm sure you wouldn't want to do that.
I told you, Mr. McClellan, was it?
That's right, ma'am.
I told you, Mr. McClellan, I ain't seen my sister in 20 years.
Very well. If she does show up here, Mrs. Nolan, you are obligated by law to contact us. She isn't wanted for jaywalking, you know. It's a little more serious than that. That's where I can be reached. Thank you for your time.
Ta-da! Now, wow. The trick is you have to come and watch the show and don't blink during that scene because that's the only time we ever see Howard.
I know.
He'll get a better part next time. This is a good part. It's an important part.
Yes,
but he'll get a bigger part next
time. It was a real eye-opener
for
me.
That's right. So, again, they can call the theater at 713-682-3525, or they can go to theatersuburbia.com. That's Theatra.
Yes.
T-H-E-A-T-R-E, suburbia.com, to get the address, directions, find out when the shows are running, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this Sunday, tomorrow, tonight, whatever that is, at 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock. We're having auditions for Doris's next play.
And really?
Yes.
Well, Doris, tell us about it.
Yell real quick and tell us.
It's a Jack Sharkey. It's crazy. It's a mystery. It's a comedy. And it's totally idiotic.
Is it a cast of thousands?
No, not.
Okay.
No. Cast of 990s.
990, okay.
What do you need for your cast, Doris?
Live people.
Male, female that can read and learn lines. Huh?
When he's to about 60, I need 3 females and actually 3 males.
Oh.
Okay. So they'll be doing
auditions. I need a young, good-looking American.
Oh,
male.
Well.
Good
luck.
If you know any, Jimmy.
She was going to say
he didn't know anybody young. Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe
so
Hank can come read.
Hank can come read for it. There you go. So that's tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock and again Monday evening at 7:30. Mm-hmm. And then they'll start their round of rehearsals while we run our show.
Now,
yes.
The way I get to the theater is that I take Shepherd to 43rd,
mm-hmm.
and then I turn left.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wait, I keep traveling on 43rd until I hit Hempstead. Then I make a U-turn and go, you know, a one long block.
It is the last street before Hempstead Highway, yes.
Yes, it is.
It's on Way Out West Road, and when you turn on Way Out West from there, it looks like you don't have a clue where you're going.
I know, you have
the road curves, and you will see the theater right there at the curve.
That's right.
So, the best thing to do is to go to the website and to look at the map and mm-hmm. to get your own directions.
Yeah.
Or look for Elvin. He's always standing out front.
He is. He was.
Everybody for coming and thank everybody
at KPFA
so for having us.
We
had a ball when we did this.
So how was Beepa's?
Has a very varied menu, and the manager is very prominent. You can catch him by his leather jacket and his Greek hat.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, Paul.
Yes, Paul, our intrepid photographer, is here. And now I want to, without further ado, I want to get the Emperor of the Royal Sovereign and Empire of the Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star on. I am so happy to see you.
Well, thank you, Jimmy.
Skinner, how you doing?
I'm doing real good.
I haven't seen the court here in a couple of months, so I didn't even expect you to be here tonight. But this will be actually the last night for you.
That is correct.
Because next weekend...
I'll
be stepping down. It's the big coronation.
Right.
Voting was today and last Monday for the new monarchs.
Right.
And they will be announced after you do your step down.
That's correct.
So this is going to be, this is the big gowns and the big jewelry and
all the glitz and glamour.
Glitz and glamour and fanfare.
Yeah.
We talked about it at the very beginning of the show because there's been a change in the hotel.
Correct.
And we gave that information, but I'm sure you wanted to do that again. And maybe reflect upon your year as monarch.
Well, it's been a very interesting year, a very short year. It has flown.
Has it really?
It really has.
Well, that's good. That means you had a good time.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Because I know there's... being a monarch of one of the courts is, I mean, you're married to the court for the whole year, and you have a lot of pressure to raise a lot of money.
Correct.
Because you are the co-president,
right,
of the organization, and so it falls on your shoulders to
right.
do so.
Right, we have to raise the money,
mm-hmm.
Not only for the charities but to pay for the coronation.
Sure.
And we try to get corporate sponsors, which this year we've gotten almost all of Coronation paid for.
That's fabulous.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
So our charities will benefit even greater.
Good, good. Now, if somebody would like to go and just to witness this event, because it is spectacular.
Right.
How do they do this?
All right.
Can they just show up?
Oh, sure, sure. It is a formal affair.
That's right. At least a suit.
Right.
Or if you're in leather, formal leather affair.
Correct.
Yeah.
Formal leather is acceptable.
Or drag. As long as it's a gown.
Oh, yes. Most definitely.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be a lot of drags.
Oh, yes. Yes. Very big hair and very big jewelry.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Coronation itself will be Saturday, January 17th.
Mm-hmm.
It will be at the Sheraton North Houston Hotel, which is on JFK Boulevard, just inside, right before you get to the airport,
mm-hmm.
right off of Beltway 8 on JFK. And we'll be in the Grand Ballroom, and people can come in, come up to the table that will be out front, and purchase a ticket for $40.
Okay.
And attend the ball.
And, of course, that $40, we can say $40 because this is a charity event, and you are a 501c3
organization.
Correct.
Yes, we are.
Yes.
And our beneficiaries this year is Legacy Community Health Services and Assist HERS.
Wonderful organizations.
Yes, they are.
I'm particularly fond of Assist HERS.
Yes.
Lesbians Helping Lesbians.
Correct.
Which is a fabulous idea.
Right.
Excuse me.
Yeah, this year we...
So what time is it? What time is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. The doors will open at 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
The ball will start promptly at 6.
Mm-hmm.
And we are hoping to crown the new monarchs by around midnight.
Ah, good. Good, good, good.
We have some very special guests.
Mm-hmm.
that are attending. Nicole the Great, which is our tutelar head of the international court system, and her air counsel will be here.
Wow.
They'll be,
that's a big deal.
Yes, it is.
Well, first of all, because she's like number two, right?
Do what?
In the court system.
Who?
Am I correct in saying that Nicole the Great is the number two person?
She is the second tutelar head.
Okay.
Jose, who was the founder, was the original head.
Yes.
He stepped down.
Oh, okay. Well, he's about 129, isn't he?
He's getting on up there in age, but no, he's not quite that old.
Well, I mean, because he has another history of being a gay activist in the 50s.
Oh, yes.
So we're talking
most
about
definitely.
An older person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he started the court system 43 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In San Francisco.
And look what it's become.
Yes.
Incredible. International.
We now have 62 courts in Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
And the whole idea is to make money, dollar by dollar, for charities.
That's correct.
And you do it with the court system.
Yes. We all have titles.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the European court system. Myself and Kimberly, as co-presidents, are emperor and empress.
Right.
And we go all the way down the line of titles to lord and lady.
And the higher the title, the more responsibility the person has to raise money, because that's always the goal.
Oh, yes.
And you guys do it very well.
Thank you. We have had a very successful year.
Good.
Even with the economy the way it is.
Mm-hmm. It must have been, because, I mean, you said the year flew by. I have known monarchs in the past that couldn't wait until you know, it seemed to drag on, and it was, you know, it was a grind, but it must have been a great year for you.
It has been. And the actual festivities start on Thursday night at the BRB. We're doing our in-town show, where all of mine and Kimberly's line members will be performing.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be starting at 7 p.m.
Okay.
And then on Friday night, we'll have our out-of-town show, which is all of our guests that are in from wherever their court is. They will be performing.
Yeah.
And after that, we'll be going on a bar tour.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
Right. We have some buses that will transport us from the hotels to four bars. We'll be going to Tony's Corner Pocket first.
Oh, yeah.
And from there, the two buses will split.
Mm-hmm.
One will go to George Sports Bar, and the other one will go to EJ's.
Oh.
And then they'll both meet back up at the BRB.
Okay.
Where we'll stay the rest of the evening.
Okay. Sounds like fun. You know, having the hotel close to the airport this year sounds like a really, really good idea, since you have so many people from out of town.
Right. And the hotel also has shuttle service every 20 minutes to the hotel.
Great, great.
From the airport.
So it sounds like a terrific, terrific weekend.
It's going to be
and
a
I
busy
hope
one.
Someone there will give us a call, because we always like to be able to announce the new monarchs first.
Your feet are tangled in the cord.
Oh, never mind. Oh, my God. We have extra long cords here tonight. Yes, I'm hoping that someone there will give us a call so we can announce.
Oh, I'm sure someone will.
Because it's some very good people running this year.
Yes.
And you've had a great year. I wish Kimberly could have been here also.
Right.
And how are you doing on the home front?
Very good.
I know that you've had some health issues, and your other half has had some health issues.
Right.
In fact, he came on the show, and we had just a wonderful time talking about it.
Oh, I know. I was sitting in the background listening. Actually, I had a procedure done 3 weeks ago, that eliminated all the back pain and the leg pain.
Fabulous.
All the muscle spasms that I was having.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will last for quite some time.
Forever.
Yeah.
Let's hope it lasts forever.
Yes. Would be nice.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck, and thank you for being the emperor this year.
Oh, my pleasure. I've had fun.
Yeah.
That was one thing that both Kimberly and I talked about, and we promoted it throughout the year, that we wanted to get community involvement, which we did, both joining us and us performing and helping them in their events. And we wanted to do it having fun.
Yes.
Which we have.
You have. Yes, I've attended
quite a few events,
and they've all been fun.
Right. And the charities will find out at Investiture in February exactly how much money they're going to be receiving.
Fabulous. Okay. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And, you know, just because you're not emperor anymore doesn't mean you can't stop by and say hello.
Well, I'll be Dowager Emperor for the next year, so
okay.
I'll still be very involved.
Good, good.
Glad all the way up through coronation next year.
Okay, well, have fun next weekend.
I will.
Okay. You are listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude right here on good old KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. And we've got some music, and then we've got leather, right?
Yes.
Okay.
space.
Good evening. Welcome to Leather Ties. I'm Daddy Bear Robert. I am your host for this evening with Leather Ties. The two songs you just heard are Divorcel. It's off of their album Conscience. Really cool album. I think Divorcel has already broken up and they've all moved on to other projects. But it's a cool album. I like all of their music. They don't have a bad album on the market. Tonight we are going to talk about some gay and leather and BDSM history. Literally, when I say history, I mean history. I mean going back, like, to 5000 B.C. Last month, I had made some derogatory comments about the Catholic Church, so I'm going to prove it tonight, among other things, that what I was saying was true.
You're forgiven. It's over with.
Yeah. But I was talking about, like, all the... Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can make that sign all you want, but get off the cross, baby. I need the wood. We're here tonight. Baby Bear's in the studio with me. Say hello.
Hello.
And Virgin is sitting in the studio, and he's allowed in the studio tonight only because it's his birthday weekend.
Yay!
So let's all sing a quick happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. You belong in the zoo. You're no longer a virgin, so change your damn name. Happy birthday to you. Because there's no way you're a virgin, baby. It's a cute name, but you're outgrowing it. We need to come up with a new one for you. Well, something starts like with 976. So again, back to Leather Ties. Let's start with some gay history. Like I said, we're going to go all the way back to 5000 BC. With the creation of rock drawings in Libya, showing an animal-headed creature with a gigantic penis and an animal-man hybrid having sex. This proves to me that even cavemen were fags. So, now, Gilgamesh, the king of Uruk, in a Sumerian poem, cycles that constitute one of the oldest pieces of literature, basically, is a gay story about two men wrestling with each other. So, and that was by King Gilgamesh. So, even he liked boys. In Egypt, King, I don't know, Pepe
would be appropriate.
Yeah, I'm saying King Pepe the second, no less. King Pepe the second Neferkari, who basically wrote the history's first gay short story about having nocturnal visits and having sex with his general Sisinning. So I guess that's where the term sissy comes from. Is he was having sex with a general. And I have noticed going through all this history that I've been researching is a lot of military people were gay.
Well, that out in the Spartans and everything.
From Alexander the Great to everybody. And then and then this country once they know gays in the military. Honey, you wouldn't have military if it weren't for us gays thinking this stuff up in the first place. Okay. So, there is a papyrus in 1250 BC that shows the rite of animation of the phallus, which basically is the first earliest recorded examples of fellatio, I should say, between how to give a BJ.
BJ, I was going to say BJ.
Yeah. How you can blow and how you can get a job doing that. And this is actually 1250 BC. And I think that's interesting. Not only between the cave drawings and 5000 BC with the gay cavemen and Gilgamesh, now we've got, and this king of Egypt writing, you know, short story porn. Which, I mean, how did he get it published? I don't know. I mean, and what do you do if you get, you know, jizz on the clay tablet? I mean, it
I guess you try to clean it off.
Yes. Now, one of my personal favorites, in 730 BC, in Greece, one of the earliest known uses of the Greek alphabet was gay graffiti, homosexual graffiti. And to loosely translate, it says, "Crimen warms the heart of Simmias." I was like, okay.
It's like semen.
I guess that's where the word semen comes from.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Well, that or Fleet Week, I don't know. You could have Fleet Week. Okay, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. I'm going to try. He was the last Assyrian king, Ashurbanipal, in the 7th century B.C., dressed in women's clothes. He was a cross-dressing king in Syria, Assyrian. And they used his cross-dressing. I guess that makes him the first drag queen, doesn't it? I mean, you know, if he was a king and he was dressing as the queen, that wouldn't that make him the first real true drag queen?
Mm-hmm.
True title, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at least he lived up to the title of being a drag queen. He was a king who was a queen. But they used this cross-dressing as their justification for overthrowing him, and that's why he was basically the last king of Assyria. It just goes on and on. 600 BC.
You said that.
I know I said that. I'm just reiterating. Now we're getting into the Romans and the Greeks and things like this, and around 600 BC is when it became customary for the Greek hoplites, which are, you know, the upper class warriors who fought, you know, the phalanx, phallus, that's where that word comes from. It became a custom for them to take a boy as young as 12 as a lover and train them until he was 18 and could hunt and fight and live on his own. And in Crete, ritual kidnapping consecrated the union. So basically they go to Crete and kidnap a boy and boff him and teach him how to hunt and fish. I mean, you know.
I wish I could do that now.
You can, but not in this country. It's called Nambla. Okay.
Well, this also goes along then, too, with the Spartans in that time,
yeah,
too. Because
exactly.
The Spartans used to...
And this is the big beef I had with that movie, 300.
Right. Well, the Spartans would actually put lovers together, because who are they going to protect more than someone they love?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's why they actually put... male lovers,
right,
together in
the
army.
That wonderful movie that won all the Oscars, 300, about the band, the sacred band of brothers, the 300, were basically 150 male couples in reality. They were all 150 gay lovers. And...
couples.
Yeah, they were couples. So... gay couples, and they're
covering your ass from?
Huh?
Covering your ass?
Yeah.
Where the phrase from?
Yeah, I would assume that's where it comes from, yeah. But basically, the Spartans, the 300, were a bunch of gay men who sacrificed their lives to save their village.
Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry. That was 378 BC. Then.
Yeah, that was 378 BC when all that happened. 356 BC, on July 20th, by our current calendar, Alexander of Macedonia. We know him as Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was a world conqueror. We all know that. I mean, there are cities named after him, Alexandria for one. And he was a flaming queen.
He wasn't a flaming queen.
He was pretty butch, but, you know, he bent over a lot. he was a king. He was a general, a world conqueror. And he had a lover named Hephaestion. And when he died, I mean, 324 or more people, boys and men, warned him. And I don't know if anybody's ever read the book. There's a book called The Persian Boy. And it is as close to reality as you can get. I forget the author's name. She researched Alexander's life. She specializes in writing or filling in accounts from history. So she researches all this history. And this book is about the Persian boy who was Alexander the Great's, I want to say, what, his servant boy or whatever, who was also his lover. And Alexander the Great, again, a great hero, strategist, conqueror, and fag. Let's see, who else do we got here? I would say, oh, well, I don't, he's okay. He was a Roman emperor. He was the first non-Italian emperor, I should say. He's the one that constructed the public works system and was gay and was very candid with it as well. And it's just like he creates the waterworks system, he creates the whole bridge thing to, and there you go. I guess he was into water sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you are today with your yellow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wearing, like, yellow sweatshirt and blah, blah, blah. So everybody's like, okay, you're a yellow hanky today. All right, yeah, I'll be a yellow hanky today. That's fine. In 79, this Mount Vesuvius erupts. We all know about that, Pompeii and all that destruction. And years and years and years and years later, there were a lot of sexually explicit and homoerotic wall murals, among other things, but wall murals, plates, dishes, vases that all had homosexual themes. And the Christian religion found most of this when they were excavating and destroyed most of it. But a lot of it has been preserved by other countries, so look it up online. Those cute little Greek plate-looking plates with the boys wrestling and doing other naughty things, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what they found.
We'll go back to Birdcage when they had the plates that had all the sexual positions on it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. The movie Birdcage.
Oh, yeah. Think of the movie Birdcage with Nathan Lane, the remake of La Cage aux Folles, the American version, with the plates when they were serving dinner. Those plates are reproductions of the artwork that was found when they excavated this site. Now, this one I find is interesting, and this one has lasted for centuries. In 188, on April 4th, the Roman Emperor Caracalla, gay, not leather, but, you know, he was gay, but he's the one that basically created and started the baths. His concept.
What are baths?
All I have to say is thank him.
Bathhouses. I think the Turkish perfected bathhouses, you know, as far as for, you know.
So did the Greeks.
Well, for being clean, I meant. Because the Turks actually used them to get clean.
Yeah, but
the Greeks used them to get dirty.
And we still use them today to get dirty.
Okay. In the 3rd century, Sebastian, a Roman centurion, there have been movies, books, and many accounts of this person. Sebastian was the one, you see the famous painting hanging in the Met. He was with the arrows in him, and he's tied to the tree and dying. He has become Saint Sebastian. He was gay. He had a lover who was an emperor.
Diocletian.
And when his lover, the emperor, found Christianity, turned against him, and had him killed. Had him stripped, tied to a tree, and shot, and left for dead. And he became Saint Sebastian, and for those of you who don't know, Saint Sebastian is the patron saint of SM. So, sadism, masochism, the SM, leather world, BDSM, the fetish world, Saint Sebastian, if you are religious, go buy a Saint Sebastian medallion and hang it around your neck and say thank you for dying for us in the 3rd century. But Saint Sebastian is the patron saint of SM. don't know why. I would love to know why. If somebody does know why, let me know. Because I would love to know why him, of all people, would be the patron saint of SM.
Ooh.
205. Oh, and 205. Wow. Go ahead and read it. Isn't that wicked?
Yeah. Birth of Marcus Aurelius Antonius.
Now, do we all know
who that is? He was the boy emperor of Rome. Was blatantly homosexual. He was married twice in one night. God, shoot, it's hard enough to get married once in your life.
But twice in one night.
But twice in one night. I guess he must have been really cute. But anyway.
The Mormons got nothing on him.
That's right. And he was kind of, in that one night, he...
He was a size queen.
He was a size queen. He looked for the most well-hung...
Charioteer. For his husband. And he married a boy named... You say that, I don't know.
Heracles.
Heracles as his wife. So he married a hung charioteer. And he married a little boy, which he called his wife. And then he sent out his agents to round up men with the largest penises in the Roman Empire. And unfortunately, I guess the Roman people got kind of sick of his slutty antics. His own personal bodyguard shoved a sword up his rear and then dumped him in the sewer when he was 17. So there goes the boy king, right? I guess he should have been praying to Sebastian.
Yeah.
Now, here's a good one. This is the first, basically the first recorded history of anti-gay sentiment and, you know, somebody really against homosexuality. Byzantine Emperor Justinian I decrees that homosexuality and blasphemy are to blame for famines, earthquakes, and pestilence. He orders anybody who is gay, a homosexual, or anybody who blasphemes to be castrated.
And what year was this?
This was in 533 A.D. So that's like the first recorded history of gays being persecuted.
Mm-hmm. And they were blamed for...
Yeah, and the gays were being blamed for famine,
Everything. Earthquake,
pestilence, you know, whatever. They were going to blame it on the homosexuals. That was just real lovely.
That sounds like today.
Yeah. In 809 B.C., now, just to make everything fair, what would you call him, an emperor? The king of Baghdad. Abbasid Caliph al-Amin.
Don't try to pronounce it.
That was as close as I can get. I'm not going to try to say that one again. His mother, he was such a queen, his mother became so dismayed at his preference for male eunuchs that she packs his court with a bunch of girls disguised as boys, so he would think they were boys, so he might have sex with girls and get to like it.
Is that where it becomes a psychological disorder?
Yeah, and these girls who are dressed as boy became a fashion in many Muslim courts. And to my knowledge, to this day, they still have young girls that dress as boys, like pages. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of what they're called, but there's a specific name for these girls that were dressed as boys. And it all started because this little prince, emperor, king-to-be, was a flaming queen, and his mommy got worried she wouldn't have any, you know, grandchildren, so she started dressing up girls as little boys, hoping he would play with them. And I guess, you know, once you drop your pants, and he's not going to play with them, is he?
Because I'm not.
Oh, I like the next one the best.
This is what I was talking about when I was talking about the Roman Catholic Church and gay popes and all this other stuff. 955 A.D. to 964 A.D., obviously, because it's a pope we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Pope John the 12th was gay. He loved both young boys and very muscular young men. And he died at the age... Pope John the 12th died at the age of 26 having a stroke. He had a stroke while having sex with one of his boys. So this is a pope who died from a stroke having sex.
At 27?
At 26 years old.
26.
He was 26 years old when he died as pope.
That's a young pope.
Yeah.
That must have been some workout.
No joke. That must have been. That couldn't have been one of the pretty boys. It had to have been one of the muscular.
Yeah.
And he was probably bottoming. Anyway.
Yeah, I would think so. He was taking some Holy Communion that night, I think. Yes. So there's the first example of a gay pope. There are more, trust me. 1157 B.C., Richard, you say it.
Plantagenet.
Richard Plantagenet.
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 And that, Plantagenet. That,
which is also Richard the Lionheart.
Richard the Lionheart, yes. For people who don't know how to, who refuse to speak French, because, you know, French is so French. You know? But Richard the Lionheart.
Plantagenet is English.
Okay, whatever. It's got... Oh, yeah, that's right, because you pronounce the T. If you don't pronounce the T, then it's French. Like
exactly.
Chevrolet.
Yes.
Chevrolet. But Richard the Lionheart, gay. He had a lover for many years named Philip.
Who is the Duke of Aquitaine.
And Philip was the King of France.
Which then Eleanor of Aquitaine later...
His mother was... Yes.
Uh-huh.
Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Yes.
Wow.
So it was a busy.
It's a
life
family thing. Yeah,
yeah, it was a family definitely. Thing. So his brother, when he was basically killed, Richard, his brother John ascended to the British throne and created the Magna Carta.
Because
Carter,
he was an idiot.
No, it's Carter. It's America. It's Magna Carta.
No, it's Magna Carta.
The Magna Carta.
I saw The Lion in Winter.
Yeah, I saw that too. You know, all those British people, they put R's at the end of the words, why can't we? You know?
Well, you are from Texas, so. Anyway.
Ooh. You are real lucky that I've got enough coffee in my cup right now. In 1210, this is what started the whole problem with the Catholic Church and the Inquisition and everything, in my opinion, and the persecution of gays in the church. Which I don't understand because they had a few more gay popes after this. But in 1210 through 1215, the Council of Paris declares that sodomy is a capital offense. And this marked the start of the militant anti-sodomy campaign by the Catholic Church because Paris passed this law. And that's what gave the Catholic Church, they assumed it gave them the right to start persecuting gays. So, if you know want to know where to start, now you know why I don't like the French. They started it all.
And God, there's a lot of French queens.
Yeah, well, drag queens. Some of them are pretty good, but damn, they smell.
Yeah, because they don't shave their armpits. Anyway.
Yeah, well, at least they shave their legs. You know, and uh-huh. if they braid their armpits with some nice bugle beads, fine.
They don't shave their legs either.
No.
Oh, I know. I'm joking.
Well, okay.
Yeah, but funny, they'll do a bikini wax, but they won't shave their legs.
Yeah. They make sure they wash their crotches, but no other part of their body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, let's not think
Thanks
about that.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Jimmy. That's a
That's
wonderful
exactly
visual.
That's exactly what I wanted
That's
to know
That's an incredible
about.
Visual. Okay, let's move on to the 1300s to get away from that topic. In 1327, Edward II, and there had been movies, there's an incredibly artsy movie, but it's brilliantly done. It is called Edward, I believe. Edward II of England murdered, because he was gay and had a male lover, he and his lover were both, no, his lover did not get killed, he was killed. His
right.
lover was banished, he was... kicked out of England, basically. But Edward II was killed. How? A red-hot poker into his rectum.
The correct word.
His rectum, yes.
Yeah.
You happy?
Yeah.
I said it?
Yeah.
I didn't say the A word.
That's right.
I said rectum. Yeah. So, I guess Edward was the bottom of that relationship, and they figured it out. They figured, well,
or maybe he was a complete top and they wanted to convert him.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's
probably
somebody heard him talking to his boyfriend, some, you know, pillow talk on, oh, baby, I stick that red hot thing, and so
ooh,
they did.
Yeah.
So they
that
did.
Red hot poker.
Yeah. Okay.
We can skip some of this.
Well, okay, yeah, we'll skip that one. I want to get to the next one.
In Pope Nicholas.
1450, Pope Nicholas empowers the Spanish Inquisition to investigate and punish homosexuals.
That was in 1450. 1464, Pope Paul II is elected to office. And just like John the 12th, he dies having sex with a man.
Oh.
But they called it, strangulation.
Yes.
You know, because they didn't want anybody to know that it was a man he was having sex with.
Now, guess who the next pope was?
Sixtus.
Pope Sixtus the IV. This pope, his reign was purchased. He bought the popeship. Well, he didn't. His male lover, Pietro Riario, bought his popeship. And he ran... Now, Pietro Riario ran the church, including the Spanish Inquisition. And he buys his lover the popeship. And Sixtus, after he died, Sixtus, the pope still, entertains himself by having muscular young men strip and fight to the death.
Oh!
And the survivor becomes his lover. This is the weird thing. This is the weird thing about Sixtus. When he was ill, his physicians prescribed mother's milk. So the pope suggested that the juice of young men would suit him better. So he did not.
So he had father's milk.
Yes, he had daddy's milk. And this is a pope.
There's no gay people in the Catholic Church.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
Yeah, of course not. Okay, here's a little SM history, some BDSM history. 1480, Pico of Mirandola, Pico of Mirandola, called Against the Astrologist, describes the male acquaintance who is sexually excited by being whipped before sex. And this is the first known case in history of masochism.
Oh.
That was actually recorded and documented that you could actually get turned on by this. By being whipped or flogged.
Oh, the next one's even
and
really good.
Now you know why the monks always did it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
Oh, they were getting off. They were just...
Okay, now...
They were just flying.
We all know the little poem we learned in school in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, mm-hmm. right?
Well, mm-hmm.
Well, in 1494, Christopher Columbus's physician on his second voyage to the New World wrote that the behavior of the natives was detestable, nauseating, and disgusting. Why? It was common practice among these Carib tribes to castrate boys captured from the enemy villages and keep them as lovers until they were 18. Once they turned 18, they were killed and eaten.
Oh!
Interesting.
So, actually, I kind of agree with him. That's kind of detestable and nauseating, you know? But... That is recorded in history and a medical diary.
I felt that way at the castration part.
Yeah, in a medical diary. Now, this one I think is funny, and I think this is where it comes from. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Montezuma's Revenge.
In 1520, Incan Emperor Montezuma II dies in Mexico. He is known to have cannibalized and sodomized boys. That was his thing. He liked to sodomize them and then eat them. This was Montezuma. So is that where Montezuma's revenge comes from? That's what I want to know.
No.
I think it is.
You think?
I think it is.
Yeah, because it was too much up the rectum. Montezuma's revenge just, you know...
Yeah.
It comes out of the rectum instead of going in.
Yeah. I think that's his revenge.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
I think that's his revenge on us now. For exposing his perversion, yes.
Well...
Okay, here's a good one. This is like the first law ever covered under civil rather than church law. In 1533, the buggery law was passed in England, decreeing buggery, which is sodomy,
yes,
a penalty punishable by death.
But so that's male only.
Starting in 1533...
Well, that's what buggery is.
Starting in...
Two men.
Buggery means two men having anal sex. In 1533, they actually, in England, made it a civil law, not church law, but an actual governmental civil law outside of the church, that If you got caught doing it, you could be murdered. Mm-hmm. You could be killed.
But... Less than 17 years later.
1533. Now, in 1550, Pope Julius III, who, upon election as Pope, made his 17-year-old male lover a member of the College of Cardinals, and also appointed him the Secretary of State.
Oh, my God.
A 17-year-old...
17.
A 17-year-old boy, boffing the Pope... gets to be in the College of Cardinals and is appointed Secretary of State. His orgies and the teenage cardinals were common knowledge. Most were horrified, but the Archbishop of Benevento wrote a book in praise of sodomy dedicated to the Pope.
Hmm.
And the Catholic religion says this never happened. Oh, speaking of, in 1563, the Roman Catholic Council of Trent concluded that sex is bad, and paintings calculated to illicit lust.
But I thought Catholics always wanted to have more children.
Right. Well, how did they have that? Sex was only for procreation purposes.
That's it. Oh, that's right. That's right. Never mind.
Yes.
So, Pope Paul IV, this is what pisses me off, excuse my French. Pope Paul IV had people, other artists, go into the Sistine Chapel and paint clothes on all Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Jackson needs to put clothes on all those old boys, yeah. Pope Paul IV had clothes painted on all the nude figures in Michelangelo's, I almost said it again, painting The Last Judgment.
In
the Sistine Chapel. If you actually were alive back then, you got to see the real painting. The Pope was so offended by cherubs' peepees that he had other artists go in and paint clothes on all the people.
You know, they did a restoration of the Sistine Chapel about 10, 15, 20 years ago.
But they can't get rid of the clothing.
Really?
They can't peel that paint off. It's soaked into the fresco.
Oh, okay.
They did actually, 100 years later, demand the removal of... Because this is the same pope that took all of these beautiful Greek statues and all this other statuary, and if they had naughty bits showing... That's where the whole fig leaf thing came in.
Yeah.
The statue of David, one of the most famous statues in the world in the history of this planet, they actually nailed a stone leaf over the crotch area of the statue of David.
It's been repaired.
Yeah, and it's finally been repaired.
Yeah.
And
they did that in Victorian times in England, too.
Yeah.
Oh, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
1570s.
Ooh.
In the 1570s, in Rome, where the Vatican is, Vatican City, Montaigne reports that the Church of St. John, Catholic priests performed same-sex marriages in 1570. Contemporary historians report that same-sex couples that were married at St. John's were burned in the city square.
Hmm.
So they did perform same-sex marriages.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church performed same-sex marriages in the 1570s.
So let's
John Boswell proved that in his book.
Yeah, but the Catholic Church denies that it ever took place, and they deny they ever had same-sex vows or anything else.
Yeah, they can.
But
say
they
that
have
all
been
they
discovered.
Well.
Yes.
Yes.
Most definitely. And yes, that was in that book. Mm-hmm. That's where I first heard about it.
But nowadays, you know, it's a sin for us to get married.
And way ahead of their times, as always, the Netherlands, which we call Holland, where all the tulips come from, where all the tulips and the hash.
That would be like calling the United States Texas.
Yeah.
Holland is just one small state.
Yes. In the Netherlands, you know, Amsterdam, in 1580, at 1580, civil marriage was established.
Wow.
In the 1580s. That's amazing to me. And civil marriage included male-female, female-female, or male-male. The Netherlands did that in 1580. Can you believe that?
damn, they were progressive.
And they're overturning Prop 8. They're doing that Prop 8 thing in California, and it's 2009. Come on, people, take a clue. This has gone on throughout history, all the way back to the gay caveman. Now, this is a good one. In 1585, here we go with the Catholic Church again. In 1585, one of the earliest recorded cases of masochism, Sister Mary Magdalene de Pazzi begs other nuns to tie her up and hurl hot wax at her.
Oh!
Ooh.
Interesting.
She also liked to take the novices that coming into the convent and have them thrash her.
Oh, bet.
So, here's a sister. I guess this was like a religious thing. It got her
to... Is this a sister?
Sister Mary Magdalene.
Sisters.
Okay, here we go again with the Catholic Church denying stuff like this ever happens. And I know why she wanted to be tied up and have hot wax hurled at her. Because of the endorphin rush. It is a mental and spiritual high.
And it feels good.
And besides the hurling it, by the time it gets to her, it's just nice and warm and tingly. You know, it's not like it's burning her skin or anything. I mean, they're playing at a safe distance. they were safe and sane even back then. They just didn't know what it was.
No, I think the next part is the funniest.
God, that was funny.
Okay.
Yes.
You talk about people coming to the New World.
The New World.
Because they were being persecuted.
Look, we finally got into America now.
Yay!
People leaving because they're being persecuted. Coming here to the Americas to start a new life where they're not going to be persecuted. And in 1610, the Virginia colony passed the first New World's sodomy law, decreeing that any sodomites... Death.
Yeah.
So
I think that's human nature.
There goes moving to the New World for some freedom.
Yeah, why do we move here?
So anyway. We persecute other people.
Mm. Mm. Now
but that's the same thing that's going on in the country right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, the separation of church and state has never truly been enacted. Right. And that is what our Constitution has said the reason we created this country was for the separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. And church at this point in time does run state. Really sad.
Yeah. Well, now, that was in 1610. In 1624, Richard Cornish of that Virginia colony is the first man to be tried and hanged for sodomy.
Ooh.
He is the first American known to ever have been convicted of this offense. Richard Cornish was the first man who was killed by law for being gay.
Yeah.
For having sex with another man.
But that's not gay.
So what happened to the other guy?
Don't know. I guess they didn't catch him. I don't know. It was probably the judge that hung him, you know?
Well, you know how it is today, you know.
Is that what they call a hung jury?
Well, you know how it is nowadays. You know, you could get a...
Well,
BJ, you can get a BJ, and that doesn't make you gay.
Right.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes you gay...
You can still be a heterosexual man and get a BJ.
Yeah, as long as you don't take a phallus in the rectum.
Yep.
Yep.
But now you can do the phallus in the rectum.
Yeah. You can boff another guy. You can actually even give another guy a BJ and not be gay.
In
society's screwed up metrosexual world we live in today, yes.
Jimmy's like, no.
Well, I can see the passive part.
Oh, look, we have another...
I've done it many times.
We have another true and honest-to-God drag queen.
Yes.
And not to leave anybody out, in 1624 to 1653, the king of Angola, it was a female-to-male cross-dresser.
So she was a drag king.
She was a drag king.
She was called King of Angola, not Queen of Angola. Okay.
She went by King of Angola. She dressed as a male. She won many battles against the Portuguese army. And, she was a drag king.
Wow.
She lived her life as a man. I don't know if she was lesbian, but I'm kind of guessing if they had flannel back then, she'd be wearing it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
You completely skip British history at this point in time in the 1600s.
Oh, yeah, because that's been so well documented.
Well, I mean, you know, Anne Boleyn's brother had a lover.
Yeah, Anne Boleyn's brother was gay.
Mm. God, I'm trying to. I'll think of some.
For
others.
Those of you who don't know who Anne Boleyn was, she was one of King Henry's wives. That got
second wife of Henry
off.
VIII.
She was the conniving cow. If you haven't seen the movie, go rent the movie. The Other Boleyn Girl. But read the book; it's got a lot more detail.
Oh yes,
The Other Boleyn Girl. The book is brilliant. That's boring. Who cares? Another guy got his head chopped off for boffing. Okay. This is wonderful. I want to know. I want to know if this is still on the books, though. This is the thing. In Massachusetts, in 1638 in Massachusetts, they order every town in Massachusetts, in the entire state, to dispose of all single persons. And I'm quoting.
Dispose?
In Connecticut, bachelors were taxed 20 shillings a week for being single. Because it was assumed that they were sodomites and they wanted them out, so they figured if they taxed them 20 shillings a week, they would have to move out of the state.
Wow.
Is that crazy?
Yeah. So they all went to New York.
Yeah, apparently.
Fire Island.
And discovered the village.
No, it's like discovered it. They built it. Come on. It's like Fire Island, here we come. Yeah. No, actually, they went to Provincetown. It was a lot closer. Rhode Island is a very nice little place. I like Rhode Island.
Dispose of all single.
Yes, and that was the
wording.
That's the wording.
An age limit here or something? Or
any adult males.
Wow.
Basically,
I assume over 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They married a lot younger.
Here's the perfect example of the separation of church and state. In 1641, the Massachusetts Bay Colony incorporates the language of Leviticus 20:13 into law.
Oh, God.
And then other New England colonies followed suit.
Hmm.
So there goes separation of church and state out the door.
Yep, yep.
I think that's pretty pathetic. They move here for freedom of religion, and what do? They take something out of Leviticus and make it a civil law. And for
the United States is one of the most persecuting countries in the world.
Wow, and one of the most contradicting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I'm sorry.
I know. I really
don't. Except for the Netherlands.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to move to the Middle East.
It's too damn cold.
And play Burka Boy.
The Netherlands, though. You would love to go to the Netherlands.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah. If there's any other country I would ever have to live in, it would be Belgium, actually.
Yeah.
I would love
to. Because that whole area,
it's
like
just
you
so
said,
free.
What, 15-something?
Yeah, in the 1580s, the Netherlands had civil union.
And so you go to Amsterdam or any of the big cities, and there is no gay area because they don't need one.
Yeah, there's no gayborhood.
No,
because
gays are totally incorporated into society.
Now, I do have to slam the Netherlands for one thing, because in the 1700s, they did actually raise the marrying age from 10 years old to 14.
Darn!
And it's like, how dare you? How dare you?
I want a 10-year-old.
Ooh, that's another
no!
Well, back in the... Yeah, whatever.
Okay, but let's get back to the 1600s for a second. 1649, Sarah White Norman and Mary Vincent Hammond are charged with lewd behavior with each other in bed in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The charges against Miss Hammond were dropped, but Miss Norman is convicted.
And she must have been the butch.
She must have been the butchy. Yeah. And she was made to give a public confession. And she is the first woman, and that is Sarah White Norman.
Mm-hmm.
She's the first woman in America known to have been convicted for lesbian activity. They used the sodomy law to go after her.
Wow. And so they made her do a public...
Yeah, they made her go to the town square, you know.
Say, hey,
I'm a lesbian.
Be completely ridiculed and say that she seduced this woman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that she likes to eat, you know, clam.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it sounds like advertising to me.
To me, too. You know, I just don't understand what the big deal is. In Massachusetts, they love their seafood. What's wrong with eating clam?
Yeah, really. But that was it? They didn't hang her?
No, she didn't get killed, no. Because she actually, men were, I think this stems, and I've noticed this a lot, men are more persecuted than women are because women bear children. Women do the reproducing.
And men are the ones that are hung.
Men are the ones hung. Good one, Chris. Yeah. The men are hung, but they're just not using it the right way.
Well, but it also has to do with the fact that men who basically, at this point in time, run the government,
yeah,
still at this point, they get turned on by woman on woman.
Well, please, they always have.
I mean, and
Jenna Jameson wouldn't be who she is if it weren't
that's
for that.
Right. But, you know, the concept of two men having sex is just completely disgusting to them.
I'm sorry, not to me. I think it's hot.
It's better than never mind. Been there, done that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, this is a fun one. These are like dyke pirates. I love it. These are like, in 1720, Anne Bonny and Mary Read, partners, lovers, dressed as men and sailed the seas, and they were tried for piracy.
Wow.
So I think that's funny.
So were those the first butch ones?
They must have been two.
They were the first cross-dressing drag kings convicted for piracy.
Wow.
On the open seas. They were like dyke pirates. I love it. I want to see a movie on Logo about the dyke pirates. Damn it, I'm tired of the L word. I don't want to see another damn rerun of the L word. I want to see the movie about the dyke pirates.
Blackbearded the clam.
That would be interesting. But what if one's blonde and you have black beard and yellow beard?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about a red?
They're clam diggers.
What about a redhead?
Redhead. Ooh, love redheads.
Oh, lobster tail.
Love
redheads. No, we're not. We're on the lesbian issue.
Oh.
Red clams, blonde clams.
Yeah.
And black clams. Anyway.
Okay, now, this is interesting. I find this strange. And of all places, of course, where is it going to happen? In Amsterdam. In 1730, authorities announced that they have discovered an extensive homosexual network in Amsterdam.
They imagine that.
Finally, 300 prosecutions resulted in 70 people, including boys as young as 14 years old, were executed.
Executed. In Amsterdam. Wait a minute, I'm confused here.
Back then, prostitution wasn't legal.
It's
government regulated now, but honey,
it's a prostitution ring. Right. Okay.
In 1740, on June 2nd, one of my favorite birthdays.
Now.
The birthday of the Marquis de Sade.
He
was born on June 2nd, 1740.
Wow.
And we all know his damn story.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually didn't even become famous until he went in jail and started writing.
That's right.
What made him so immortalized.
Is the writings
and he never would have written them if he hadn't gone to prison.
And nobody knew he was writing them. They were
slipping them.
Yeah,
he was slipping them to the little chambermaid or whatever. Yeah. And she was getting them to a publisher.
Yeah,
and that's where
the publisher went to jail.
Sadism. Oh, I didn't know. Really.
Yeah,
that's where the word sadism comes from.
Yeah.
Is the Marquis de Sade.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you wouldn't have sadism and masochism without the Marquis de Sade. Person that masochism comes from, I think I've got it on here, too.
Yeah.
Because that name was Masochai or something like that, I forget.
It's German, I believe.
Yeah. So.
Ooh.
Oh, we're going to skip that one because we all know about Napoleon. Never mind.
Napoleon was gay?
Napoleon was a big queen.
Okay, I'll go ahead and read this.
Please do.
The birth of Jean-Jacques Régis de Cambaceres, however you say it, in France. Under Napoleon, he became the primary architect for the Napoleonic Code.
Oh.
This is the guy who wrote the Napoleonic Code for the people who know what this is.
Mm-hmm.
He was discreet, but not secretive about his homosexuality. And it was through his influence that the Napoleonic Code and many later laws based upon the Napoleonic Code were written, And the Napoleonic Code, to quote, legalized private consenting homosexual acts between adults. So even Napoleon liked to, you know, lick a stick.
Or get his stick licked.
Or get a stick up his booty.
Yeah, there you go.
Or vice versa.
Now, this one's just stupid trivia from me, because I love this pop group. They're defunct now. You know the group La Tour? They wrote, you know, people are still having sex.
Yeah.
You remember that song?
Yeah.
Okay. 1772, the Marquis de Sade, his manservant...
La Tour.
Was La Tour.
No!
That's where that group gets their name from.
Oh!
La Tour is found guilty of many other things, including sodomy, blah, blah, blah. La Tour was hanged and strangled, then his body was basically burned and the ashes strewn to the wind. And September 12th, the Marquis de Sade and La Tour were both executed, and an effigy was placed in wherever, blah, blah, blah. I can't read the French words.
Okay. Place de Saint-Louis.
Yeah, for trivia buffs, the pop group La Tour, the ones that did the song People Are Still Having Sex, that's where they get their name from. La Tour, manservant of the Marquis de Sade. Now, this is my personal favorite.
Mm-hmm.
This is just bizarre. I want to start using this term. I want to bring this term back from the 1700s. In 1785, the Classic Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue...
What?
the classic dictionary
of the vulgar tongue.
This is all the dirty words. You know, they had a separate dictionary for all the dirty words.
Wow.
Now they're all just in Webster's wherever. You know, you look up the F words in Webster's dictionary.
Yeah.
Well, back then it wouldn't be in the dictionary.
Oh,
it'd be in the vulgar tongue dictionary.
Gotcha.
This was a slang term for gay men. That was actually a phrase, a term in this dictionary. It's called gentlemen of the back door.
Well, duh.
I think that's funny. It's like ding dong Avon, knock knock plumber. Okay, I need to get the bathroom out of you. Get the front door. It's like gentlemen of the back door. Is that, could that be any more?
I like that. That's probably where that started.
I think that's where that whole knocking on your back door, you know, take it up the back door, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's where that started. Yeah. I'm not even going to read that one. That one's just nasty. But I'll just say that in 1788, a French doctor, François Amédée Dopet, confirmed... Dopet, ballet. Make up your mind. You say the T or don't you, damn French. Okay. He actually confirmed and reported that women... and men, but women have warmer vaginas after being whipped. And he basically wrote the first SM safety text.
Really?
Because he wrote an actual paper detailing the proper way to flog and whip and how to take care of somebody afterwards. So basically this French doctor, of all people...
Going back to the French again.
Yeah, wrote the first SM safety text.
Wow.
Which basically started the whole safe and sane thing because he's the first person to actually document here's the proper way to do it. And the safe way to do it to get them off but don't hurt them permanently, you know.
Well, let me jump in here and let you know that you're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, right here on good old KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and always on the World Wide Web at dubcubed.kpft.org.
Dubcubed. Oh, that's so cute. I like that, dubcubed. Now, in the 1800s, this one's fun.
Yeah.
In America, of all places, in Washington, D.C., Weehaw, a two-spirited leader representative from the Native American Zun tribe.
It's Weehaw, not Weehaw. Weehaw.
Weehaw. Weehaw.
I know that. I've heard that name before.
It's like a Jackie Chan movie.
It's not Wigwam. It's Weehaw.
Weehaw.
Uh-huh.
He is the two-spirit leader and representative of the Zuni tribe.
Ah, that's where I've heard that.
Is married to a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In Washington, D.C., he gets married to a man.
Oh, I didn't know that's a... Oh.
No, he didn't get married to a man in Washington, D.C. He was just married to a man.
No, I think he...
While he was
I
in...
I think he did it on the Lincoln Steps right there.
I don't think so, too.
But, yeah. Okay. I'm just going to do that. Okay.
No, I think what they're saying is that he was married to a man,
mm-hmm.
moved to Washington.
Washington, D.C., because he was the Native American representative to the American
government. With his husband.
And he moved there with his husband.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Take it or leave it.
Yep.
And they took it.
And to backstep in 1809, New York, in Genton versus Reed, the Supreme Court recognizes gay marriages, which is a good thing, but the common law marriages will be declared void in 1901, a few years later. Bad thing.
A few years? Almost a century.
We started 5,000 B.C. That's just a few years. So a century later, basically, they declared common law marriages void. So for 100 years in New York City, it was legal to be gayly married.
Hmm.
1810, the Napoleonic Code is finally instituted by France. It eliminates all laws forbidding homosexuality.
Yay!
1810. And we still can't even get Californians married.
I know. And let me tell you, my friends in California are really ashamed at that.
Since Baby Bear's of Russian descent, I put this one in here for him. In 1813, Prince Mikhail Kutuzov, is that how you would pronounce it?
Kutuzov.
Who led the defense against Moscow, led the defense in Moscow against Napoleon, dies of a heart attack while having sex with a soldier. So the guy who pushed Napoleon back at the Russian borders had a little bit too much celebration.
Oh, what a way to go, though, you know.
Yeah, thank you. If I go, that's how I want to go.
Oh, tell me.
Orgasm, that's the way I want
to go. Pound me into a coma, Daddy.
Isn't that the ideal way to go, though?
Yes!
Here's something I really, really want everybody to listen to and pay attention to, especially in this country.
Mm-hmm.
In 1857, on February 22nd, the birth of Robert Stevenson Smith Baden-Powell in London, who is the founder of the Boy Scouts.
Yes.
Was a confirmed homosexual.
Yes, he was.
His birthday is February 22nd.
This should be a national holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
February 22nd.
So I think everybody on February 22nd, we should all go down to the Boy Scouts building in pink tutus and sing happy birthday.
That sounds like it would be
because
fun.
The Boy Scouts who outlaw and kick out every gay member, the Boy Scouts were founded by a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, stick that in your tuchus. And
God, you use Yiddish.
Who said that? Somebody said tuchus today, and the damn word stuck in my head. Sorry. How about...
Tuchus on the brain?
Yeah, I got.
Were you hanging around Marsha Mink?
I call him a tuchus all the time.
Yeah,
so.
No, he calls me that all the time.
Oh, okay.
It's a polite word. Tell me, Robert, you're acting like an ass.
Oh.
You know,
tuchus head.
Yeah,
tuchus head.
A lot of Crisco for that one, I'll tell you.
Oh.
That's what I'll get Robert for his birthday.
Okay. Now, until then, this word wasn't really a word, but in 1869. Carl Maria Kernbeny, actually writing anonymously, used the term homosexual in a pamphlet to repeal Prussia's sodomy laws.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first known example of this word. The first time this word was put in print in 1869.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until then the word homosexual became an actual term and began appearing in U.S. medical journals. And
100 years later...
Yeah.
We had the Stonewall riots.
Right. All because of Judy Garland. Damn bitch couldn't hold her liquor.
I know. Head up and die.
Yeah. Now, this one I thought was interesting. In a cemetery in India in 1875, a couple of gay balloonists died. And there's actually, this is the first recorded tombstone with gay lovers on it.
Oh.
They actually have this monument depicting them lined together, naked, hand in hand, partially covered by a sheet, at a mausoleum in India.
Wow.
I think that's pretty cool.
I do, too.
Gay tombstone. That's pretty cool. In 1888, we all know about Thomas Edward Lawrence, a.k.a. Lawrence of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
He was captured and caned and raped by the Turkish soldiers, and he got to like it so much that when he finally got free, he hired Robert Bruce to flog him regularly after he returned to England.
Ooh,
he really got into
it. He got into it.
See there? So flogging can do something good for you. I'm not going to give... we're not going to talk about him. Bill Tilden, the first American to win.
Oh, yeah.
He first American to win at Wimbledon in 1893. He basically was snubbed by the tennis world, and I think he had his titles even revoked.
Yes, he did.
For winning, because he was gay.
When they found out he was gay.
When they found out he was gay.
They stripped him of everything.
They stripped him of his Wimbledon titles.
Yeah.
Well, they tried to do that with Billie Jean King.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She was. They tried.
They tried.
They tried with
She was obviously a lot more butch than Bill was.
Mm-hmm.
It
was an earlier age, and people were just this. That was the love that dare not speak its name back then.
And ooh, good phrase. Mm-hmm. That phrase is quoted by somebody in here. I know where that quote came from. Now, this is how early gays actually started organizing and banding together. 1894. One of the earliest known gay organizations was formed by George Cecil Ives. The Order of the Chironea.
Chironea.
Took its name from the Greek battle in 338 BC by the Sacred Brothers. The Spartans.
Yes, Spartans.
The 300.
Yeah.
So, the first earliest gay known organization was basically founded in 1894 and named after the place where the 300 Spartans fell.
Yeah.
Because everybody knew what the Spartans were. J. Edgar Hoover, we're not going to talk about him.
Oh, please,
about her.
Please.
He's an embarrassment that needs to be wiped from our history, but, you know, we have no choice.
You know, he was gay and he was a homophobe at the same time.
Yes. Yeah.
Big contradiction.
That screwed up.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's Roy Cohn, too, so.
That's the next one.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. 1899. Publication of A Marriage Below Zero by Alfred J. Cohn is considered the first American novel in which homosexuality was the center theme.
Wow.
The book is called Marriage Below Zero, published in 1899, and naturally the gay character commits suicide.
Of course, had to.
Yeah, it's just like every Gordon Merrick book you've ever read. They always die at the
always
end.
Have to.
I'm not going to say it. Oh, now here's a good one. This is where I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to read this. In 1909, in Kentucky. Of all places. I guess their chicken was pretty finger-licking good.
Ooh.
In 1909, in Kentucky, two black men are accused of oral sex with one another. They are not convicted because a judge couldn't find any law on the books with which to find them guilty. So they urged Kentucky lawmakers to remedy the problem, and many states, soon after that, outlawed oral sex.
Between men.
No.
Oral sex, period.
Period.
Yes.
Oral sex was considered sodomy at that point.
Wouldn't that kind of piss off a lot of the straight people?
Ooh. Well, I don't know. Did women do that?
Women did.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was thinking, you know, like, if you went to, like, the saloon and Miss Kitty's, you know, I'm sure you could get away with it there, but I don't think any proper Christian woman would do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, they would.
Well, okay, they wouldn't admit to it.
They may have been forced to do it, but, yeah, they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for all you transvestites out there, and to be honest, the majority of transvestites are actually heterosexual, not homosexual.
That's right.
In 1910, Magnus Hirschfeld created the term transvestite to separate transvestites from being lumped in with homosexuals.
Oh.
So, Magnus Hirschfeld is the one who coined the word transvestite in 1910 to differentiate that fetish lifestyle or that mentality from homosexuality.
Right.
That mentality. So I thought that was good. Now, Robert Duncan in 1919 is the first poet to ever use the word, can I say that?
No.
Rooster. Rooster lollipopper.
Someone who fellates.
Yes.
Rooster liquor.
The very, very crude term for fellatio.
Yes.
It begins, it's a compound word, C-S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the first person to actually use this word in print.
In print?
And he was,
wow.
And in 1919, he loved to read poetry nude. So he would go to a...
Oh, he could be on this radio show.
He would go to a poetry reading and strip down and recite these poems about fellatio and other things. Buck ass. And people, and I can just imagine what people thought.
Wonder how...
Except for Auntie Mame, you know, she would have loved it.
Excited he might have gotten halfway through his poems.
I don't know.
You know, that...
The poem survived, so obviously the sheets didn't get sticky. Yeah. Oh, you want to take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to I'm going to tell you who coined the term gay for homosexuality.
Ooh.
And I'm going to tell you about when the Human Rights Foundation was actually founded.
Okay.
So let's have some music, and we'll be right back.
And you're right, and then we woke up. We feel like we are.
Welcome back, Leather Tide, Daddy Bear Robert T here. I guess I need to say a few things here. Number one, nobody said anybody got shot because guns hadn't been invented yet. I said they got hung, they had been had pokers stuffed up them and other things, or they were beheaded. Nobody got shot because guns didn't exist at the time.
And I have something to correct also.
What?
That the separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. It was the ideology that this country was...
But that's what you said.
Well, I know that's what I said, but somebody interpreted it as being it was part of the Constitution, and I did not say that.
No, you said that they left because of persecution.
Exactly.
And they wanted
separation of church and state.
Yeah. So, you can play it back on the radio. Download it from KPFT and listen to it again. Where were we? Oh, transvestites. Magnus Hirschfeld is the one who coined the term, and basically it was to separate transvestism from homosexuality. And again, got to reiterate, even Eddie Izzard goes into this in one of his concerts. Most transvestites are heterosexual. They don't want to be lumped in with the homosexuals. So, just that's where that word comes from, back in 1910. Where was I? Here we go. In Berlin, the Theater der Eros is the first theater devoted exclusively to gay plays, and that was in 1921, basically before the Second World War and Hitler and all the persecution, where everybody had to go underground and all these records were a lot of these records were destroyed. What?
You've got to go back to 1920.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1920, May 8th, the birth of Toku Lakosan, basically known as Tom of Finland. Tom of Finland was born January 7th, 1919. He's an icon of gay artistry. I'm sure everybody knows who Tom of Finland is. Now, the word gay was basically taken out of context and coined as a homosexual term to refer to homosexuality in Vanity Fair by Gertrude Stein in 1922.
When it's
so
original.
This is like the first time in print that the word gay was used for homosexuality was when Gertrude Stein did this, and it was an article or a short story called Mrs. Fur and Mrs. Skeen.
And prior to that, it was just meant to be happy.
Yes. The word gay actually means happy if you listen to a lot of Christmas carols, but Gertrude Stein made it a...
She did it.
Yeah, it was Gertrude Stein's fault.
Oh, a rose is a rose is a gay rose.
The Society for Human Rights was founded in Chicago by Henry Gerber in 1924.
Mm-hmm.
Which I believe the Society for Human Rights eventually morphed into what we now know as a human rights campaign.
I don't know. I know that there was a group in California called SIR, the Society for Individual Rights.
Right.
I don't know if that's related.
Yeah, that's one thing I would love to look up. See if the Society for Human Rights in 1924 actually eventually became what we know of as the Human Rights Campaign. Mm. But it was the first, basically, gay lib organization in the U.S. and is granted a charter by the Illinois legislature.
Okay. Let me ask you, I know you probably talked about this at the beginning. Where are you getting all this information?
Oh, I'm sorry. A lot of the information, I'm getting it from different sources, from different books, online sites, things. One place you can go to get a lot of this information, especially like the SM stuff and some other things, go to theleatherarchives.org.
Oh.
So they have the history going all the way up to present day, and they're constantly updating it, but a lot of this information is coming from theleatherarchives.org.
Okay.
So if you want to get all the gory details, go there. I believe if you go to leatherarchives.org and click on, I think it's events, and then click on timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all the timelines there of the information that they have.
Cool.
And they cross the borders between gay, lesbian, fetishists, the birth of leather, the birth of BDSM, and where that's all coming from. And they basically kind of give you timelines. That's where a lot of this got from.
Okay.
And then a lot of the other stuff I just kind of researched. Libraries, gay books, gay history books, things like that. So, Yukio Mishima, and he's a Japanese artist.
Yes.
Yukio Mishima is one of my favorites. He was born in 1925, ended up committing suicide in 1970.
Yes.
And I don't know why, but I'm assuming because...
No one knows why.
The culture he lived in, yeah. I don't know. The repressive culture mm-hmm. in Japan, I don't know, but he ended up dying, committing suicide in 1970.
He was like into the samurai
yeah,
life.
Yeah, he actually died a samurai death.
Yes.
He actually committed harakiri with mm-hmm. the sword. So... And a lot of his artwork was very homoerotic and dealt with samurai themes and the ancient themes and that style of artwork.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant artist. He really was. 1926, May 30th, George Jorgensen.
Oh.
We all know who George Jorgensen became.
Yeah.
George Jorgensen. Jorgensen. God, that's a hard one to say. George Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Well, that's why Christine's so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christine
I don't know if Christine Jorgensen was the first transsexual, but is
no.
obviously the world's
no, but when the
best known
the,
transsexual
yes.
because
yes.
it was so publicly.
Mm-hmm.
She made it so public.
Yes.
But... So
they had done the operations before.
Yeah, but I think she's the first one that really
yeah.
outed herself.
Yep. Became worldwide, world known.
1929, the birth of Chuck Renslow. Happy birthday, Chuck, in August. August 26th. For those of you who don't know, Chuck Renslow, oh, God, what hasn't he done? Chris Studios, The Gold Coast, Man's Country, International Mr. Leather, other enterprises. He's the one who was instrumental in founding the Leather Archives and Museum
mm-hmm.
and the Chicago Eagle.
Yeah.
So Chuck Renslow, he's really been an icon in the leather community. August 26th, if anybody wants to have a birthday party for him, let's do it. 1930, Denmark finally repeals its sodomy laws. Yay. And shortly after that, Poland, Switzerland, and Sweden, all followed them. Within 15 years, Poland, Sweden, and Switzerland all repealed their sodomy laws.
Wow.
Within 15 years of 1930.
Must have been
So between 1930 and 1945,
yeah.
most of modern Europe finally got rid of sodomy laws.
So was
and Germany never did.
I don't know.
No.
I think Germany
no.
Had,
no. Germany did not.
No, they didn't.
No, not at that time.
No, it was paragraph 175, and that's what Hirschfeld
yeah.
was trying to get overturned.
Because that's,
right.
that was one of the things Hitler
that's right, and never,
was
yeah.
very anti, was
that's
they
right.
also went into the concentration camps.
Yes, and then mm-hmm. even after the war, paragraph 175 was still in effect, and the men mostly... who were in concentration camps with the pig triangles.
Mm-hmm. That's
when
well,
they came out of the concentration camps, they went directly to jail.
Yeah.
But that's also...
But that's where that pig triangle comes
from. If they were
from.
Jewish...
They had the gold star.
They had, instead of having the gold Star of David, they had a yellow triangle behind it and then a pink triangle behind it. I don't know if
oh, I didn't know that.
I'm sorry, a pink triangle in front of it.
Yeah.
Like the way... Like
the yellow
the way,
triangle was going north, and the pink triangle was going south to form the
right.
Star of David.
Right.
Right, but that's also where we came up with the pink triangle.
Yeah.
That's where the
yeah.
pink triangle came
absolutely.
From, was from,
yeah.
was from Nazi Germany.
Germany.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's what they used to
because we use that now.
Yeah.
And actually, the black triangle was also developed back then for lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those came out of Nazi Germany.
Yeah, well, I can't remember what the symbol was that they used for all the gypsies and other people that they...
It was another color.
Yeah, but I forget what shape it was.
No, they were all triangles.
Maybe it
was. No, because...
But they were different colors.
Yeah, there were different color ones. I think, like, the Catholics were green.
Was that how...
They were different colors. The Jews had the Star of David, which
uh-huh.
is... a double triangle, in
right.
effect.
Right.
And Gaze everybody else pink. Had a single triangle in different colors for whatever. And pink was for homosexuals.
Do you know if you go to the Holocaust Museum here in Houston,
yeah.
Yeah.
The
the color chart, whole list I'm pulling up right now.
Yeah, because they have that document at the Holocaust Museum.
Let's see, it looks like red is for politicians. Blue was immigrants. Pink was homosexual.
Black was lesbian.
Well, I know some places have talked about that there was a... they haven't found complete evidence on the black ones that it may be something else instead of lesbian. Oh, here we go.
Maybe miscellaneous for everybody else.
I was trying to translate German.
I thought it was like gypsy or something. Yeah.
Well, that's part of it.
I thought they were purple or black or something.
Let's see. Red triangle is political prisoner. Social Democrats, trade unionists, liberals, communists, Freemasons, anarchists. Green is habitual criminals. Blue is forced labor, foreign forced labor immigrants. Pink is homosexuals and sexual offenders. Purple was religious dissidents and Bible students. Black triangle was people who were deemed asocial elements, including gypsies, mentally retarded, mentally ill, alcoholics, vagrants and beggars, aristocrats, intellectuals, pacifists, conscription resistors, habitually work-shy, prostitutes, and some anarchists.
I bet the lesbians fell under
that. The lesbians fell under the deviant social behavior.
Yeah, and brown triangle was another one for... gypsies. And then there was ones that were inverted over it, and, you know, letters that told you which, where they came from.
Huh.
And a little bar over top if you were a habitual, a repeat offender.
Wow.
What? So how many bars did the pink triangles get?
I'd have about 7,000.
Well, we know why your favorite color is pink, Jimmy.
Oh, and you got a black bullseye underneath it if you were part of the military and you were caught doing this.
Oh, cool. So a black bullseye with a little pink triangle in the center.
So it looks like a big exclamation point.
We need to come up with a new, yeah.
I thought Hitler also had a... gay lover prior to him. There's question about that.
I don't know.
I think it was question really? About him having... I mean, if you look at it, he had Jewish blood.
Yeah.
He was probably, most likely, had a gay lover. He was not Aryan.
No, he wasn't.
He was not Aryan. He was against everything that he was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that was part of his psychosis.
You know, that's...
Okay, moving on. I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
I don't want to, get into Hitler's mindset. It was just impossible to know. He was just a psycho killer. That's all there was to it. 1945... The formation of the Veterans Benevolent Association is the first gay membership organization in the U.S. formed to try to get homosexual soldiers some respect.
Oh.
And then they had endured.
And somewhere in here, the Kinsey Report.
Yeah.
I can't remember what year.
Kind of comes out, I think. Didn't the Kinsey Report come out like in 46 or 47? Isn't that when it caused all the
stuff? I thought it was the early 50s.
Maybe it was the early 50s. I can't remember.
Maybe it was in the 50s.
I think it was in the 40s.
I don't remember.
And Kinsey documented that...
Well, no, I think maybe he started
homosexuality... Hold on.
Sexual behavior of the human male was in 1948.
So, yeah.
Sexual behavior in the human female, 1953.
That's right.
Well, I was correct.
My birthday.
In the 40s.
I mean, the year I was born. I should know that.
But it basically
does
documented...
Does that make you a lesbian?
No, the first one, 48.
Oh, okay. So that's why he's gay.
But it... In the
because Kinsey said the year he was born it was okay, so he said, okay, me.
Yeah.
But
me.
In the Kinsey report, it documented the fact that it was a natural act.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yes.
It was all throughout, not just humans, but in... All animals.
All mammals, yeah.
It would be all mammals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that bugs do it.
And that's where...
bees do it.
Oh,
okay.
Don't sing that song. Birds do it. Bees do it.
That's where we get the 10%. That's where we, we get a lot of stuff.
That's where the 10% of the population is. That's where all those, that's
fantastic
that
numbers
from.
Started out.
Yeah.
And in fact, Kinsey also played around himself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, he was sexually experimental.
Yes, he was.
Well, yeah.
Which
practice what you preach.
A lot of my straight friends are. And I have been myself.
What?
I've had sex with more women than a lot of my straight friends have.
Did not.
And I did
not.
Let's not go there.
Okay.
Not young.
I think that's for another show.
It was.
Okay.
You know.
In 1951, 1953, in that time period, Shaw's was the first leather bar to open in New York City.
Oh.
It doesn't exist anymore. I'm sure it's probably like a deli.
Shaw's Deli?
No, that's where Shaw's.
That's where Sean's pawn and jewelry came from.
Yeah.
No, this was in New York, not here.
Well, but it moved here.
Yeah, it could have. So,
oops, I should have said that name.
I know we've got a listener who's listening to us and
good
and looking for errors.
Yeah, and by the way, we know the Washington Monument wasn't built at the time the American Indian his lover was in D.C.
Yeah,
it was a joke. If you don't understand a joke, change the channel.
Yeah.
1953, the German physician Harry Benjamin is the person who coined the term transsexual.
That's right.
And that was to differentiate and distinguish the mindset of a transsexual versus a transvestite versus a homosexual. So Harry Benjamin, a German physician, German doctor, is the one who coined the term transsexual.
And he wrote all of the...
tons of papers on
literature from him on that. And he made up the documentation for transsexualism.
Right.
Yes.
It's been modified over the years, but yeah, he's the one that laid out...
He wrote the Bible.
Yeah.
On transgenders.
Yeah. Let's see, we don't even call him transsexual anymore. We call him transgender.
Yeah.
I wonder, who coined the term transgender?
I have no idea. Over the years, it's...
It's just kind of morphed.
There's been a shift.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's not, transvestites is not in favor right now. It's cross-dressers and... You know, it goes back and forth.
Yeah.
They can't make up their mind what they want to be called.
Well, no. There is a big difference in the mindset between a transsexual and a transvestite.
Absolutely.
A transsexual is somebody who believes they were born in the wrong body.
Yeah, it's a whole spectrum of things. It's like...
Were you born in the wrong body, or do you just like to wear somebody else's clothes? The other gender's clothes. One's a transvestite. Yeah. They like to dress up in the other gender's clothing. One is a transsexual. They believe they were born in the wrong body.
Right.
There's a whole different mindset there.
Well, there's a continuum.
Yeah.
You know, it goes, from being...
From a heterosexual cross-dresser to someone who wants to...
No, just being heterosexual all the way to being homosexual.
Oh, yeah.
There's a variance all the way through that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is in a different spot.
Yeah.
There's so many gray areas, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I think there are a hell of a lot more bisexuals than there are straight people or gay people.
Well, I agree.
Well, honestly, I think everybody's bisexual to a point.
I agree.
One of the funniest things I ever heard, and it's very true, was that the comedian White? Is that Bill White? He was on the Redneck Tour of the...
I don't know.
Is it Bill White? You know, my friends call me... Tater Salad, that guy.
Ron White.
I'm sorry. I keep thinking, why am I thinking Bill White?
Because he's the mayor.
Because that was the mayor.
That was good. Yeah. Ron White, in one of his stand-up routines, says everybody, every man is a little gay. Has a little gay in him.
I've proved that over and over.
He was talking to one of his friends saying this in this joke he does.
Yeah.
And he says, and I'll prove it to you. Because the guy said, oh, no way, I'm not gay. He said, okay, I'll prove it to you. And he said, okay, prove it to him. He said, when you go rent a porn, do you go rent a porn that has guys with little itty-bitty winkies that, he said, no, man, I like them to have a really big one. See, then you're gay. If you would rather see a big one in a porn movie than a small one in a porn movie, you do have a preference. That means you're just a little gay.
Just a little gay.
And like, okay, that's a joke. It's funny, but it does make sense.
But that goes with the theory of penis envy.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
All men have penis envy.
That's right.
And so
if they've got a really big one, they must really be
butch masculine. Well, no, a real
no,
man.
No, it's probably. And the guy that has a big one, oh gosh, I wish I had a small one. It'd be so easier. And, yeah, right. Just like if I had straight hair, if I had curly hair, if I had whatever, you know.
So, in all honesty, every man has a little bit of gayism in them because of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if they have penis envy, that's...
There you go.
That's partially...
There you go.
Now, 1953, this is what I find amusing, especially under the Freedom of Information Act that we now have. 1953, President Eisenhower issues orders prohibiting employment from gays in government agencies.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
1957, the Crittenden Report... The U.S. Navy concludes that homosexuals serving in the military do not create a security risk.
Ta-da.
And of course, the Pentagon denies the existence of this report for 20 years until the Freedom of Information Act forces them to release this report. And it's like, so for 20 years, you've been persecuting gays in the military and persecuting gays in government offices, saying that, well, they're security risks. We can't hire them. We have to fire them, get rid of them.
Which...
When it was already proven in 1957 that they weren't a security risk.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's amusing.
That's also a contradictory thing that we have.
Also in 1957, along with the Crittenden Report, which doesn't exist, Amsterdam's first leather bar and hotel opens.
Uh-oh.
The Argos, and it's still in business today.
No kidding.
The Argos is still open. I would love to know how many times they've actually had to revamp and redo it, but...
Boy, no kidding.
The Argos is still there.
And before we get into the 1960s, let's not forget Herbert Hoover.
Oh. Who?
I mean, I'm sorry, J. Edgar Hoover.
Who? No, I'm not going to talk about J. Edgar. No, not going there.
Okay.
Cross-dresser, had a lover.
Yeah.
Let's see.
You don't know.
But he persecuted them, too.
Yeah.
J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the CIA.
FBI,
whatever. It's one of those acronyms, yeah. He was one of the intelligence agency heads. Yes, FBI, that's correct.
His lover, Tolson.
For those fact checkers out there, it was the FBI.
Oh, and they're going to get me on Herbert, too. So.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Well, oh, well, but I corrected myself.
Yes,
a Hoover's a Hoover unless it's a Eureka.
Or a Dyson.
Yeah. There we go. And Dyson's got balls.
Is that where vacuum pumps came from?
I've been called a Hoover on many occasions. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, don't tell Kirby, because he prefers Kirby. Yeah. Anyway. 1969, this I find strange. I want to know if this was like the cover of Time Magazine. I want to look this up in Time Magazine archives.
What?
1969, Time Magazine declares 1969 as the year of the newly militant homosexual.
Really?
Yeah. So it was 1969.
Must have been after.
Yeah, if you were born in 1969, that's the year of the militant homosexual on the Chinese calendar. That was a joke.
So it had to be after Stonewall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was after Stonewall. Yeah. Because that's what caused...
That's what caused it to be militant.
Yes. Know?
Because Judy Garland couldn't hold her liquor.
I still don't get that
or
one.
Pills.
But anyway.
The whole thing with the Stonewall riots is...
It was
Judy Garland had just died.
Mm. She was buried the day.
That day.
That day.
And so all the drag queens and all the other folk and all the gays were out at the bars drinking their sorrows away, and that's when the cops decided to do a bar raid. And all the gays were drunk and pissed off and sad, so that's when the gays started fighting back.
Yes.
And that's called the Stonewall Riot. Is when the gays finally... Judy Garland couldn't hold her liquor. She OD'd on booze and pills.
Yeah.
And the gays were mourning her, getting drunk in the bar... And
she was our idol.
And the cops decided to raid the bars and arrest all the fags, and the fags fought back.
Yeah.
So are we going to talk about some popular people that we know that are gay or had have gotten...
Her gay tendencies?
Not just gay tendencies, but who have become famous because of gays.
Because of gays or because they are gay?
No, because of gays.
Like who?
Oh, like icons, like Donna Summer.
Oh, okay.
Bette Midler.
Madonna.
Who started off in bathhouses.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Fun things like that.
She started out singing in bathhouses. Let's
clarify that.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. And yes, it is on record. Gary Manilow was her pianist at those bathrooms.
Yes.
So, what, you didn't know that? Barry Manilow was her accompanist?
No, I did not know
that.
Okay. You're kidding!
Everybody know, you know Married with Children, Peg Bundy?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
She was one of Bette Midler's original harlots.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I didn't know that one either.
Oh, no.
She was an original harlot.
Wow.
Why are you saying accompanist when you could say pianist?
Katie Sagal was one of Bette Midler's original harlots, and she used to tour with Bette Midler and do the bathhouses and everything else.
Wow. So does pianist have to do with water sports?
I'm just saying Barry Manilow was an accompanist, and he was just her pianist in the bathhouse.
Yes, he was her pianist.
Yes.
Well, that's why I'm saying water sports.
No, no.
He was her water sport.
No,
expert.
He didn't actually put the piano in the shower room. He was.
I mean, that the steam.
I'm really
room.
Trying to keep that. That
I know.
PC
I know.
Room.
I know.
You
know
the steam room would really wreck the.
The harp on the.
Yeah.
The keys would get all sticky.
Well, that could be from other reasons. They would, we won't go there either.
The keys would get swollen.
No, but actually, look.
I love when that happens.
Swollen.
Hey, don't bang on the counter. Actually, if anybody watches the BBC America, Barry Manilow was just on the Graham Norton show talking about that.
Really?
And how slippery and slidey it got because of all of the lube.
Oh.
And that Bette Midler actually used to toss out lube and condoms during her song. And she used to, like, have schlong contests and things like that. So, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she would be singing. She'd just start going down there and ripping guys' tails off, saying, okay, no.
Oh, my God.
I mean, Barry Manilow, I would love to have just been a fly on the wall for that one. Or really sit down with Barry Manilow off TV where he could say whatever he wanted and get the real scoop on all of that that went down. Because, you know, that had to have been just absolutely just evil. That must have been so much fun.
Bette Midler could tell the story and it'd be fun, too.
So. Yeah.
Yeah?
Because I'm sure she could make it interesting.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait for Bette Midler's, like,
memoirs.
The memoir when she's 80 years old.
Yeah.
To get the real story
out of her, all of it. Yeah. Yes.
But, well, Liza Minnelli's another one that we turned into an icon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
But that's only because she keeps marrying fags. She keeps marrying gay men. It's like,
just like her mother.
Yeah, and what's exactly. That last one? He was a Liza Minnelli impersonator. I mean,
how egotistical that is.
Yeah, she
just think of that.
She married
just think of psychology there.
Yeah, she married herself with a penis.
Oh, my
what,
goodness.
What, we're on the timeline, or we're on the the continuance of between homosexual and heterosexual. Does that come up?
That comes into the drag queen thing.
Yeah.
Which is...
No, that's...
I said drag queen, not transvestite.
Right.
No, but I mean, it's... No, when you think about being so egotistical that you want yourself...
Oh, that's been around.
Narcissism?
Yeah, narcissism. Yeah. Where would that come in on the continuum?
Okay, that goes all the way back to Greek. Narcissism comes from the Greek god Narcissus.
Yes.
That's true.
So that's where that word comes from. So, yeah, it goes all the way back to the Greeks.
He saw his reflection in the water and fell in love with himself. Yes.
I've known some men like that, but anyway.
Oh, too many.
Yeah, most of them.
Too many.
What I love is when you go, if you go out to a bar, and honestly, you can always tell the narcissist, I don't care if it's a straight bar, gay bar, if they're men, women, whatever are there, if you can't walk by a window without glancing at your reflection, if you are checking your makeup in your cocktail glass, you know, it's like,
and you see this all the time.
You do.
Oh, you do.
I know guys.
And it doesn't matter the bar.
Now, the guys that go out and wear sunglasses at night, and no Corey Hart pun intended here, but you're wearing your sunglasses at night. These are the guys that take their sunglasses off every 10 or 15 minutes and turn it around, pretending like they're cleaning their glasses, but they're just checking their hair.
Yeah.
God, I remember the days of checking your hair, though.
Yeah.
When it was real popular.
Back when you had hair.
Yeah, back when I had hair.
Yeah.
And you know, that was even post-hairspray.
Are we talking John Waters? Are we?
Yeah. Okay.
on to Sean.
Well, no.
These days,
now, see, there you go. Divine, that's another one
that
the gays made.
These days with the gel and the hair every which way, it doesn't matter.
Well, but Divine was gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was the gays that really elevated her to icon status.
Oh, yeah.
Because
oh, yeah.
of how disgusting.
What's her name
her
from New
were.
Orleans?
Yeah.
What's her name?
I can't think of her name.
Oh,
from
I know
New Orleans.
Her. Yeah, you know what's her name.
The one who's...
Brandy Alexander?
No, the one from New Orleans that's now become real big.
What? Jimmy that, James?
No, he's, no,
no, he's from Texas.
I was going to say, I thought
no,
he was
the
from
one,
Texas.
Marla. Varla.
Oh, Varla Jean.
Varla Jean. I didn't know she was from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Wasn't
Varla she, Jean Merman.
Yeah.
What was it? What was she in a what movie was she in?
She was in Girls Will Be Girls.
Yeah.
She oh, was also yeah. in Wigstock. She was the oh, one okay. eating like the tongue or the liver or something. Oh,
okay. No, she did that way before
no,
that
because
she used to do it in videos when she oh, lived okay. in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
I used to see her go out all the time.
In the movie oh. Wigstock, she did that.
Oh, okay.
So what I'm saying, that's the one.
That's what I was thinking. Varla. You said Varla.
She must have some age on her.
No.
But no, because she started doing that when she was like 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing her walking down the street.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was when she wasn't, that's when she was doing more, it was actually more comedy.
More comedy.
Mm-hmm. Drag.
Punk shock drag.
Where now she
does
really
glamour.
Yeah.
does
yeah.
more glamour.
Middle-aged really, glamour.
Well, it's yeah. just like RuPaul. I mean, come on. When RuPaul started, he started out as punk drag goth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did a movie called Star Booty.
I still haven't seen it. Still
that.
Haven't seen it.
And, I mean, I actually lucked out and found the soundtrack to Star Booty with RuPaul. I will bring the CD in
Please
for you to look at the
do.
Picture.
Oh, my God.
But if you get RuPaul's autobiography,
uh-huh.
he's got like a whole chapter in there. He's got a ton of pictures from when he did Star Booty, and he talks about making the movie, too. But back then, he was like mohawk. He had all, you know, ears
really?
Pierced, nose pierced, all this stuff going on. And then all of a sudden, like 4 or 5 years later, he reinvents himself and becomes supermodel of the world.
Yes.
But yeah, he started out as a shock drag,
wow.
too. And
wow.
he went from shock drag to drummer, mm-hmm. drama.
Yeah,
glamour drag.
Yeah,
but Varla was
well, high drama.
Yeah. Varla was a lot more shock drag.
Oh yeah, Varla was disgusting. She
oh.
was trying to be the new Divine.
Oh.
Yes, she really was.
Okay,
I mean
she
really
actually even did
disgusting.
She actually did dress up and do Divine impersonations, doing even more disgusting stuff than Divine ever did.
Boy, that's pretty disgusting.
So, yeah.
Yeah, like sticking tongues down her throat,
yeah.
beef tongues, and
yeah.
other places. And
going down to, you know, Chinatown and getting bull penis and things like that. And
yeah.
Oh,
oh
yeah.
Goodness.
Varla did some real disgusting stuff, and to see the change of what she's made herself is tremendous. Because
well,
you would
show,
never...
show business, you have to recreate yourself all
yeah.
the time.
She did.
Constantly
reinvent. She really
yeah.
did.
Yeah, Britney, shave your head, grow the hair back, put
yeah.
on a wig, shave your head, go Britney.
Well,
yeah.
and, look at Madonna.
And look at Lindsay Lohan, just breaking up with her girlfriend.
Well, maybe she needs to call Anne Heche. I don't know.
No, I think she needs
oh, wait,
to
no,
call...
Wait, no, Anne Heche is straight now, never mind.
I think she needs
There's
to...
There's always Ellen.
No, Ellen's married to Portia de
Rossi. Yeah, that's right. And Anne Heche okay. would just screw anybody up.
Well, I think...
Screw anybody up or just screw anybody up?
I think Lindsay needs to call Paris Hilton.
Ew.
Wouldn't they make a beautiful match?
No. Yeah.
Ew.
No.
No, that's...
Skank on skank.
Yeah.
Well, it's appropriate.
Paris Hilton is not cute. I'm sorry.
Well, is Lindsay Lohan that cute?
She's cuter.
Lindsay Lohan could actually be a phenomenal actress, and she could be a very
beautiful
girl. If
she get off her drugs.
If she would get off the crap and clean up her
yeah,
act.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved what she compared herself to Kate Winslet, was it? No. Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson.
She
got ruined.
Lindsay Lohan recently said, well, you know, I just don't understand why people don't treat me the way they treat Scarlett Johansson. Well,
just
maybe
because
she's not strung out on heroin.
There is that.
You know.
Well, maybe because Scarlett Johansson is a real person.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you live your life in shock media,
mm-hmm.
but then again, Scarlett Johansson, she keeps a very private life. A lot of these people do, and it's the people that, like, the Paris Hiltons of the world, the Lindsay Lohans, people like that.
Media whores.
They're media whores.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And their philosophy is any attention is good attention.
Celebutants.
Yeah.
No real talent. Just
no.
Well, no, Lindsay Lohan actually does have incredible talent.
She
could
incredible
be. She's an incredible singer. She's an incredible songwriter. And she does put out some fantastic music. She's a decent actress. If she'd apply her craft, she'd be a good actress.
Well,
you know?
Like I said, if she but got she off of her drugs. Herself.
There you go.
If she got off her drugs, she probably could be a better actress.
Yeah. Well, it's time to wrap this up.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it?
I have one cutesy little thing to add to this here. Since we had so much information about popes and all that, well, everyone know that you have the chance now to smell like a pope.
Oh,
that's
no.
gross.
A company has come out with the Pope's Cologne. It's a classic old world cologne made from the private formula of Pope Pius IX. They obtained this formula from the descendants of the commander of his papal guard and lifelong friend, General Charles Chartet. They followed his complex, exclusive formula meticulously, using the same essential oils and perfumers used 150 years ago.
Yeah, basically they're scraping the sweat off altar boys.
There
and
you go.
It in the bottle.
Pope juice.
This truly extraordinary cologne with surprisingly freshness and notes of violet and citrus. They'll be glad to send you a free sample for $4.50.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Number one, I don't wear colognes anyway, but.
But I found that very.
I have one cologne that I wear, and it's only because it smells clean like soap.
Excuse
I don't.
Me?
I really. I have three or four colognes, but I don't really ever wear them.
You're going to pull everything. You can pull everything out of those CDs. So we are coming up here to the end of the show.
Oh, we certainly are.
Enjoy. Take us out with some cool music. Hope you all had fun in between the joking and the history. And
yes, you know, we're so boring
and
unintelligent.
Thank you for the
history. I loved it. Oh, yeah, me too.
Well, hopefully some people learned some things tonight.
Two people did. You know, we're still boring and unintelligent in that. And once again, to our listener out there.
Like we always say, if you don't like the show, change the channel. There's always something else on.
And as I've also said, it is after hours at kpft.org.
Mm-hmm.
We love to hear your news events, your storylines, love mail, hate mail.
Dirty pictures!
After hours at kpft.org. Send me an email.
Bad, Jimmy.
Tell us what you want to hear. Let me know.
Have a good night.
We're like a comedy
good
club
night.
Here. We have open mic nights.
Yay.
We've been listening to After Hours, the queer radio that's boring and unintelligent and don't know what the hell we're talking about. Only here on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. Now it's time for your PSAs.
90.1 KPFT Houston preempts its regular programming on Tuesday, January 13th and Thursday, January 15th for special programming. On Tuesday, KPFT broadcasts confirmation hearings for Hillary Clinton to the position of Secretary of State. On Thursday, KPFT broadcasts confirmation hearings for Eric Holder to the position of United States Attorney General. Hearings start at 9 a.m. and continue until completion. The regular 9 a.m. broadcast of Democracy Now! Will not be heard. Tune in at 6 p.m. to hear that day's program. Again, tune in on Tuesday for the confirmation hearings for Hillary Clinton to the position of Secretary of State, and on Thursday for confirmation hearings for Eric Holder for the post of United States Attorney General. This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT Winter Pledge Drive is coming up on January 17th. You can keep your community radio station going strong in 09 by becoming a phone volunteer. All you need is legible handwriting, good hearing, and be personable on the phone. The schedule is flexible, including mornings, evenings, and weekends. Sign up for one of our phone volunteer trainings on either Monday, January 12th at 6 p.m. or one of the daytime trainings at 12 noon on Tuesday, January 13th. Or Wednesday, January 14th. Each training takes place in our studios at 419 Lovett Boulevard. Community and college organizations are encouraged to join us. Just email volunteer at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 31.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston.
If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.